light what the figures out yesterday. And, of course, in a week's time, we'll be discussing the budget. In a related story, one Labour MP is ready to stand down now if it means Sir Keir Starmer will get out. Speaking on the BBC, Clive Lewis, Labour, Norwich South.
And I'd have to obviously consult with my wife as well and family. But you know what? You know, if I'm going to sit here and say, you know, country before party, party before personal ambition, then yes, I have to say yes.
And I'll be asking you, is Labour a better bet under Andy Burnham? Meanwhile, news overnight.
We do have some major breaking news as we come on the air tonight, because President Trump has now signed the Epstein Files bill into law.
That was CNN breaking that news. Back here, BBC trans bias has hurt our children, say hundreds of parents. And, of course, the Russian spy ship on the edge of UK waters. A lot to get through. 7 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump says he signed into law the bill to release files on Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Trump had long resisted calls to make them public, but has faced significant pressure from his supporters. The president, who was once friends with Epstein, insists he knew nothing of the late sex offender's crimes. Speaking earlier this week, Mr. Trump insisted he's not the one who should be scrutinized.
I have nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein. I threw him out of my club many years ago because I thought he was a sick pervert. But I guess I turned out to be right. Of all the money that he's given to Democrats, he gave me none. Zero. No money to me. But he gave money to Democrats.
The US Justice Department now has 30 days to release the Epstein files. American military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine as part of efforts to end the war. It follows unconfirmed reports that Washington and Moscow have held talks without Kyiv and are proposing it makes major concessions. It's claimed the plans would see Ukraine ceding territory and new limits would be placed on its army for security guarantees. The defence expert Karen von Hippel has told LBC it would cross one of Ukraine's many stated red lines.
Don't forget that the Ukrainian people have to approve of any peace deal, and that would give Zelensky some time to try to shore up more support so they don't have to make all these concessions. I mean, there's lots of stuff to be worried about in this, right? I mean, who's to say that the American security guarantees would work? What happens if Russia just doesn't abide by them? What, is America going to bomb Russia? There's a lot to be understood still.
Defense officials are continuing to explore military options should a Russian spy ship move further into UK waters. Yesterday, it was revealed that the Yantar is currently north of Scotland gathering intelligence. Defense Secretary John Healey says the Russian crew used a laser to target RAF pilots that were monitoring it. Russia has accused the government of whipping up militaristic hysteria. One of the world's leading AI firms, Nvidia, has reported record quarterly revenues of $57 billion. It reflects strong demand for its computer chips. The Californian-based company has also recorded profits of more than $31 billion, sending its share price more than 3% higher. And NHS doctors are set to use artificial intelligence to help find growth that could become bowel cancer. Officials say the tools can act as a second pair of eyes and have been approved for conditional use. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 95.07. It closed down 44 yesterday. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Some wintry showers continuing in northern Scotland with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Ah, oh, heavenly. The feeling of driving the new Volkswagen e-Transporter. All electric, low running costs, excellent range, and £219 a month on business contract hire when ordered by the 5th of January with £1,971 initial rental. The Volkswagen e-Transporter. Drive happy. Visit Volkswagen-vans.co.uk. No ownership. Excludes 20% VAT. 24-month, 5,000 miles per annum. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Commercial Vehicle Finance.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven, Thursday, the 20th of November. Let's start with a big fat zero. What percentage of us think the economy is in great shape under Labour? That would be zero. Those inflation figures yesterday, we've done some research to show you the suggestion that 3.6 is absolutely ridiculous. It's far greater in most areas. And we'll see those figures and the economy indeed through the eyes of a small business owner, a nurse and a lone parent. Meanwhile, in other news, as you've already heard on the LBC News, the Epstein files looks like they will be released, but will there really be no redactions? We'll try and get to the bottom of that. Back here in the UK,
the predatory ex-Met police officer David Carrick has been convicted of molesting a 12-year-old girl, but could evidence from the 1980s have stopped him sooner? I'm LBC's Fraser Knight with all the details.
The UK warning to Russia as the spy ship targets RAF planes with lasers. Yes, you did hear that correctly. The government minister will be on later to talk about more free breakfast clubs. If you have children or a child at school, do stay tuned for that. And my personal favourite story of the day, and goodness knows we do try to make your days brighter.
We deployed a Royal Navy frigate and RAF planes to monitor and track this vessel's every move, during which the Yantar directed lasers at our pilots.
Miscommunication there. That is not my favourite story of the day, but we will be bringing you more on Russia. Also, in the world of the economy, we'll be hailing the great work of NVIDIA and explaining to you what makes them such an economic powerhouse. And now to the extraordinary story of the day.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
To Essex, where a naked, overweight male cyclist was punched to the earth by a binman biker, who has obviously been dealt with by the courts. There's something called World Naked Bike Ride Event. I'll be asking you, have you ever ridden your bicycle naked? And what are the challenges?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Now, that will make your day brighter, but unfortunately, it's a bit of a grim start. And as I said earlier, at least the Labour government have achieved something with a united kingdom in that none of us, not one of us, think the economy is in great state under Labour. Now, we had those inflation figures yesterday, do you remember? And we heard that inflation had come down 0.2% from 3.8 to 3.6. And I found myself in a supermarket yesterday, and I just looked at some prices, and I thought, I don't think this is right. So we've done some other research. Let's give you, and we're going to look at this through the eyes of a small business owner, a nurse and a lone parent, and we'll hear from them in a moment. So no economists, no politicians, real people. So we're running at 3.6, and that was in part hailed as good news by the Chancellor. Shall I share with you, in France, it's 0.5. In Germany, it's 1.2. And here's where it really bites. Bread is up 4%. Other foodstuffs, 4.9%. Milk, 16%. Chocolate and sweets, 18%. Meat, including beef, 27%. That's the reality of inflation. Hotels and transport, if it's important to you, up 4.5%. So what is the reality? Well, here's Rachel Reeves admitting the government has more to do.
I do recognise that there's more that we need to do to tackle the cost of living challenges. And that's why one of the three priorities in my budget next week is to tackle the cost of living, as well as to cut NHS waiting lists and cut government debt. There are 300,000 more jobs in the economy than there were at the beginning of this year. But of course, I want to also to do more to help people back into work, which is why at the budget we'll be setting out more details of our youth guarantee to ensure that young people are in education, employment or training.
No surprise this was featured in Prime Minister's questions yesterday. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch asking questions of Sir Keir and him refusing to rule certain measures out.
The Chancellor's cluelessness, I'm afraid, is damaging the economy now. The Prime Minister needs to end this shambles. So can he confirm today that he won't break another promise by freezing income tax thresholds?
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, the budget is 1 week today and we will lay out our plans. But what we won't do, Mr. Speaker, I've said what we will do in terms of protecting the NHS and public services. What we won't do is inflict all austerity on the country as they did. Of course, huge country. What we won't do is inflict a borrowing spree like Liz Truss did, also inflicted and did huge damage. Mr. Speaker, have they learnt anything? She's apparently got a golden economic rule, I think. So it's a very important rule, this golden rule. This is £47 billion of cuts with no detail. No wonder the Institute of Government says they're on very shaky foundations. They haven't listened and they haven't learned.
So what's it like trying to run a business in these troubled economic times? Mike Cherry is a small business owner and joins me now. What is the business, Mr. Cherry? What is it that you and your colleagues do? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. We actually manufacture products that are personalised for business and consumers, and we also supply into the hospitality trade.
And what is it you make? You're at WH Mason & Son. What is it that you and your colleagues make?
Yeah, we actually make coasters, key rings and products like that, but we also supply the pegs, the spiles and the shives for the real ale brewers in the UK. Okay.
How long the firm been running, Mike?
We were established in 1897, so we've just celebrated 128 years, and it's still a family business, fifth generation now.
Oh, how exciting. Come on, how are times? This is where the rubber hits the road, as they say in the States. What's it like running a business?
It's challenging, Nick. As you can imagine, you know, people are struggling with the cost of living. We've seen national insurance go up on the headline rate, but also we've seen the threshold reduced considerably. That's had an impact. And there is a lack of confidence out there. We are definitely seeing that people haven't got money to spend, and we're struggling because of that in some ways. Clearly, hospitality has not recovered yet from the pandemic, and that is getting worse. We struggle with high energy costs. We struggle with business rates that are disproportionate to us as a small manufacturer. And we've also had the announcement by the government of inheritance tax on passing the business on to the next generation. All of those are creating huge uncertainty, lack of confidence. We are not taking on more people as we had hoped earlier this year. And costs are going through the roof.
Toughest that you've ever known, Mike?
Sorry?
Is it the toughest times you've ever known running the business?
It's one of the toughest times. We've been here before in the 70s and the 80s that I can remember. But there is this lack of confidence out there. We need the government to be putting stimulation into the economy to give business the confidence to invest in our people and to invest more in our businesses.
We're talking after the YouGov survey asked the British public, or members of the British public, the following question. Do you think the British economy is currently in a very bad state, a very good state, or a fairly good state? What would you say?
I think it's in a very bad state. We've got the highest energy costs that we have ever known. We are uncompetitive when we're comparing ourselves against Europe and the Americans and elsewhere. That is meaning that our prices are unable to actually reflect the costs, and our margins are being hammered.
All right. The firm is WH Mason & Son. Mike Cherry, your small business owner and director, good luck with the firm and to your colleagues 12 after 7. Now, one pressured group, of course, is single or lone parents. Danielle is in Manchester. Danielle, thank you for coming on the show. Might I ask how many children you have and roughly their ages? Good morning.
Good morning. I have two children. I don't know if you can call one a child now. He's just turned 19, and I have a nine-year-old.
They're always our children. I speak with children in their 30s. They'll always be my sons. Right, So, I mean, I don't want to be rude. You're at the pressure point then when you go around the supermarkets and you're having to buy milk and you're having to buy food and whatever else it might be.
They
say 3.6%. I don't believe it, Danielle. What do you say?
Absolutely not. So I listened to those figures. I listened to the prices that you were talking about earlier. And yeah, absolutely. I dread going food shopping now. Every week that I go, the costs are more. You can't find, you know, you talk about shopping around. It doesn't make a difference. And there's so many different things in the economy that are affecting me personally. And I know that they'll be affecting a lot of other people.
What are those things, Danielle?
First of all, you've got those energy prices, the food costs. So just the cost of running a household. But when you're a single parent, I work full-time and I have to pay childcare. And one of the things in the Labour manifesto, one of the only things actually that attracted me to Labour this time round was their offer of free breakfast club. What's happened to that? Where's it gone? I've heard that the pilot has been an absolute failure because they're not funding that enough. They're not a lot of schools are looking to take that up. So altogether, I can pay something around £250 to £300 a month just for wraparound care.
Hang on. I mean, that's extraordinary. I'm sorry if you heard papers rustling, because I'm just looking. We've got a government minister joining us in about half an hour, a little over half an hour, who'll be telling us that the parents across the country are saving £450 a year. If you like, we can record a direct question from you to the minister and play it out later. Danielle, what would you ask this particular minister?
I would ask him how they're going to make sure that if they are going to implement this free breakfast club, that they fund it correctly, that so that schools can actually feel confident to take that up. Because what I've heard, even from the school that my daughter goes to, is that the funding that's on offer at the moment is completely impractical and will make those primary schools, who are already struggling, struggle even further. It's not an offer that my school are in a position to make at the moment. So I am absolutely not saving a penny on breakfast club. And there are very limited support options for parents who are in receipt of benefits. So like myself, I work hard, I'm not in receipt of any benefits. The only thing I can get is 20% off childcare if it's eligible. My breakfast club isn't eligible for that.
Why is it not eligible?
They haven't registered, signed up, gone through all the protocols that it must take. You have to jump through hoops to go through it. And it's not just the wraparound care. They're off school 13 weeks a year. I don't know any employer that gives you 13 weeks a year off. No. So I'm paying for holiday club as well. And it's just astronomical. Add that to the cost of living. Add it to the freezing of the income tax thresholds. You know, so I'm working really hard to earn as much money as I can, and I'm not seeing it in my pocket.
Last question, Danielle. This is after the YouGov survey. Do you think the British economy currently is in a very bad state, a very good state, or a fairly good state?
It's in an absolutely abhorrently appalling state at the moment, in my opinion.
All right. Best of luck with the show. I imagine, actually, lastly, what are we, about a month and a bit away from Christmas? That must be... yeah, go on. Tough time.
Yeah, it's a tough time, yeah. You want to give your kids a great time for Christmas, but the pressures are there.
I've enjoyed speaking with Danielle. Look after those children. I appreciate the 19-year-old, but they'll always be your children. And I'm speaking as a dad myself. We're going to be hearing from Nurse Antonia in Sussex, through the eyes of a nurse as well. But we want your stories. Inflation running at 3.6%. Don't believe it. But we are at least a united kingdom, because not one of us, we are united in thinking that the Labour has allowed the economy to slip into a bad shape. 7:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he signed a bill approving the release of files relating to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Pentagon officials are expected to meet President Zelensky in Ukraine later to explore restarting peace talks with Russia. And Moscow has accused the government of militaristic hysteria after it was revealed a Russian spy ship is on the edge of UK waters. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Wintry showers will continue for northern Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 clockwise, there's one lane closed after Junction 5 for the M26 because a car has broken down, so there are queues from Junction 4 for Orpington. There are also queues on the A2 westbound. There's one lane blocked at the Bean Interchange because a lorry has broken down. On the A13, there are long delays going into town from Marshway in Dagenham through to the Beckton roundabout. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry because of technical problems. On the Tube, there's no service on the Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge. That's because of the poor rail conditions. There are minor delays on the Central line between North Acton and West Ruislip because a train has broken down. And also on the train, South Western Railway services aren't stopping at Queenstown Road. That's because of some problems with the signals.
LBC.
It's another busy Sunday in the Thing household. Mr. Thing is leaf blowing, Ash is watching the footy, and the twins are power washing the cars and everything else in sight. They're all making the most of half-price electricity from British Gas. Available every Sunday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. with Peak Save. One of the ways we're taking care of things. Search British Gas half-price electricity to see what you could save. T's and C's apply, up to 60 kilowatts per session. Eligible tariff and smart meter required.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
300,000 businesses and about 30,000 charities have at least had one cybercrime incident in the last 12 months. 25% are small businesses. It can be quite devastating for some organisations, and one or two do go out of business as a result. And ultimately, if you're connected to the internet, there's a risk.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business. LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 after 7. Headlines in a moment, although the story we're discussing is on the front page of a couple of the newspapers. We're looking at the economy. We're looking at the fact that under this latest poll from YouGov, unfortunately, the percentage of Britons who think the economy is in great shape is zero. Antonia Bellison is a nurse in Sussex and a member of the RCN, the Royal College of Nursing, and joining me now. Your work is always one that people look at with enormous affection and support and indeed sometimes love, and particularly the financial challenges. So again, when you go food shopping, I don't know whether you have a family, but what do you see as the reality of inflation actually on the supermarket shelves? Antonia, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Absolutely. You know, we've got a year into the Labour government and it hasn't helped working people. You know, as a nurse and a single parent, like the caller before,
right.
You know, the food prices are astronomical. And, you know, the RCN released recently about how many nurses are calling in with stress, unprecedented numbers of stress because we're so understaffed. But yet people don't want to call in sick because we want to do the best for our patients, having to pick up extra shifts so you're exhausted. You know, I'm dreading the thought of Christmas coming because I simply haven't got the spare money. You know, and it's working as a nurse. I work in the criminal justice system, working with patients who have mental health difficulties, and that's a juxtaposition of so many broken systems. You know, the Labour government want to get people back into work, but basically what they need to do is to make sure that people's mental health is being treated, and there aren't the staff around to be able to ensure that people are healthy. You know, investing in health is investing in the economy, and the Labour government needs to make sure that they are investing in health so that the people are back working and then contributing to the economy. You know, Nick.
Antonia, might I ask how many children you have?
I have 3 children.
What's the age range?
Well, like the caller before, I've got a 19-year-old, I've got an 18-year-old, I've got a 16-year-old. But, oh, Nick, you know, I've got a teenage boy and he never stops eating, you know, and it's me making difficulty. Like, you know, I'm skipping meals to make sure the kids are eating, you know. I'm worrying about how to make ends meet. You know, just yesterday I've signed up to a nursing agency on top of the, you know, 37 hours I do a week.
Can I put one word to you? Christmas.
Yes. Oh, I know. I'm already really worried about it. And that's exactly why I'm having to pick up extra shifts. And all my colleagues around me, you know, we are facing worries about economy, but then we're also worried about the fact of corridor care nurses. So we've got the worries about picking up extra shifts. But then when we're going to being doing our job as nurses, we aren't able to be the nurses that we want to doing because there aren't enough staff. So investing in the NHS, investing in staff is key to ensure that we're not having this drain. I was speaking to a nurse yesterday from Australia and just hearing about how much better off they're paid. It's no surprise that people are leaving this country in droves seeking a better life because the cost of living is just astronomical, but the conditions at work are appalling. And the government has to address, and what they need to do, they need to start listening and working with the unions, because the trade unions have answers as what can be happening, but investing in the workforce is key.
Last question. We're talking about this because of the survey. In your view, Antonia, do you think the British economy is in a very bad state, a very good state, or a fairly good state? Which would you say?
I would say that it is in a state. End of.
In a total state. I wish you a happy Christmas, and obviously with the children, I hope that you can, and credit to you that you're trying to get out there and do some extra shifts to get the cash in so you can pay for that. Antonia Bellison is a nurse in Sussex and a member of the RCN, the Royal College of Nursing. I mentioned this story is on the front page of some of your newspapers. It's on the Daily Mail, and it's also featured in the Financial Times. A couple of other front pages for you. Well, there's some Russian activity. The Daily Telegraph saying there's a possible cash for land deal to end the war in Ukraine. The Daily Mirror and The Sun more excited for the Mirror's case. We see you, we're ready, the North Sea standoff and the UK warning to Putin over that spy ship. We've got more on that story for you later. Front page of the LBC app. Trump signs bill to release the Epstein files. Will there be no redactions? My LBC colleague Joseph Draper, reporter, will be giving you more on that in just a moment. And let's take one other before I come to some of your calls. At random, I go to the Daily Mail, Mail Online, which has got the background to, I don't know if you heard about this, but the Queen's son, Tom Parker Bowles, his Jack Russell's name, whose name is Maud, was savaged by a giant mastiff. Mr. Parker Bowles obviously talks about how he managed to free his dog from this giant mastiff dog by punching the dog repeatedly in the groin, let's put it like that area. Well, the Daily Mail has now tracked down the dog, tracked down the owner, and you can read all about it there. But let's take calls on the cost of living and the reality. I remind you, when you go to the supermarkets, bread up 4%, other foodstuff 4.9%, milk 16%, chocolate and sweets 18%, meat such as beef 27%. Dominic in Reading, what's the reality as you see it, Dominic? Good morning.
Dominic, yeah, I just see that successive governments appear to be taking over childcare. I mean, I gave up work when my first daughter was born. I gave up my job to stay at home. I fed my children every morning, breakfast, and then when they ended up at school, breakfast was before
school. Did you have a wife or partner who went to work?
My wife was a teacher, and she...
I mean, that's the difference in the case of the two young women we've just been speaking with. Of course, they don't have anyone else. They're both lone or single parents, whatever the expression is currently.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be extremely difficult for them.
Really tough. Really
tough. What we had, an extremely... How would I call it? Intensive network.
Okay. Yeah.
And if there was, like, if somebody was working.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get to school to pick up the kids, they'd phone somebody and somebody else would take their child home with them.
Cheeky question. Bit of a cheeky question. How many dads were in the network? Were you the only dad or were there a number of dads?
There was two of us.
And how many women? And just roughly in the network.
I would say it was mostly women, but I mean, the dads, we knew a lot of the other dads as well.
Yeah.
But there was two of us that were stay-at-home dads.
Yeah.
The other dads did come and pick kids up from school and they would come round and...
Yeah. How old are the children now?
Oh, ancient.
Oh, they're ancient. Okay, so they're like mine. Yeah, they're having your children.
Yeah, they were born in 1990, 1992. And
I have to accept
that things were quite a lot different then.
Lastly, when you go round the supermarket now, and you hear that the Chancellor's saying, inflation is coming down 3.6%. Funnily enough, I did go around a supermarket yesterday, and that's what I was thinking. It just doesn't look like it on the shelves. Dominic?
I find it, when I go shopping, I find it terrifying. Mm. I look at certain stuff, but not only the supermarket. You know, if you want to go out, say, for a burger in a pub.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you start looking at £15, £16 for a burger, and you think, how?
I know. Well, I think the two lone mums with whom we were speaking, I doubt that they often can afford to go out and get burgers and chips in pubs. Dominic, look after the children. They'll always be your children, of course. Robin Kent, is it time to start your checkout challenge again? Do you remember that? That used to be every Friday. I think we were ahead of the game there, Rob, but it certainly did its job and it highlighted the issues there. We'll come back to that in a moment. 7:27. Now to the story that's leading the LBC app and, of course, is on the LBC Bulletin. President Donald Trump announcing that he signed a bill ordering the release of all files related to the dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein to be released, but no redactions. LBC reporter Joseph Draper in the studio with more. Joseph, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, yeah, President Trump resisted calls, didn't he, to release these documents until now, dismissing it as a Democrat hoax, insisting his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein ended years ago. But he has come under increasing pressure from his own party, from his own MAGA base, to release them. Really, this is, I think, one of the biggest rifts we've seen in the MAGA movement to date. And overnight, he finally bowed to that pressure, signing a bill ordering the release of all files related to the serial sex offender. That passed through Congress with overwhelming support from both parties earlier this week. And here he is talking in the White House last night.
We have nothing to do with Epstein. The Democrats do. All of his friends were Democrats. And I hate to see that deflect from the great job we've done. So I'm all for it. You know, we've already given 50,000 pages. You do know that. But no matter what we give, it's never enough. You know, with Kennedy, we gave everything and it wasn't enough. With Martin Luther King, we gave everything and it's never enough. And it's just a Russia hoax as it pertains to the Republicans.
Well, the Justice Department has 30 days now to release all those unclassified documents. There may be some redactions. And the These are documents from the criminal investigation into Epstein, including transcripts of interviews with victims, witnesses, items seized in raids of his property. And we're expecting tens of thousands of pages. These are separate to the 20,000 pages released last week, some of them suggesting the president knew about the girls. That was from a House committee who subpoenaed Epstein's estate. Now, these new documents are from the criminal investigation. And those documents released last week created a growing rift, as we've heard, between President Trump and his closest allies, leading to a colossal fallout with Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, or as he's called her, Traitor Greene.
A traitor is an American that serves foreign countries and themselves. A patriot is an American that serves the United States of America and Americans like the women standing behind me.
And of course, Nick, one of those names which could crop up again in these documents is Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, formerly Prince Andrew. Mm. And he has until the end of today to respond to a congressional committee who've asked him to give evidence about his connection to Epstein. Here's Democrat Congressman Suhas Subramanian.
The reality is I don't have enough evidence or information about not just Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, but everyone involved with Jeffrey Epstein. I have what basically the public has right now, and we're still going through the Epstein estate. But I'll say that every time we seem to get a set of documents, Andrew's name seems to appear over and over again.
Now, Andrew, of course, has always denied wrongdoing, as President Trump.
Joseph Draper, LBC's reporter, reporting. Thank you for that. Coming up after the news, we'll come back to the true cost of living. Scott, you'll be the next caller. And, of course, later in the show, these are all out of these breakfast clubs. We've already heard from one young mum who says they're failing. We'll put that directly to the minister concerned. It's 7:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Time for the news. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he signed into law the bill to release more files on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Trump had long resisted calls to make them public, but has faced significant pressure from his supporters. American military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine as part of efforts to end the war. It follows unconfirmed reports that the US and Russia have held talks without Kyiv and are proposing it makes major concessions. And defence officials are continuing to explore military options should a Russian spy ship move further into UK waters. Yesterday it was revealed the Yantar is currently north of Scotland. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Some wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I have to say, it must be incredibly dispiriting if you are listening to this and you are on 25, 30, 35 grand a year, whatever, and you are hearing that people who earn significantly more than you feel poor. I mean, that is not something that makes you feel like you're going to get out of bed tomorrow with the same vigour that you did this morning because you want to get to earn those sums of money.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is in full swing.
And we're using AI to guess what could possibly come next. OK, tomorrow's big drama.
Kelly Brook burns the rice and beans.
Oh, come on, up the stakes a bit.
Angry Ginge cries in the trial.
And how we laugh when
Ruby Wax vomits cheese fruit onto Anne.
Yeah, OK, enough now.
Campmates escape and seek vengeance on Geordie Overlook.
Tune in to The Real I'm a Celebrity.
Continues tomorrow at 9 on ITV1.
And ITVX.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, 4 McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m, not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants, subject to availability.
When you need urgent medical help, but you're unsure where to go, use NHS 111 to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams? Please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor or paramedic. NHS 111. Call, go online or use the NHS app to be assessed and directed to the right place for you.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So just coming up on 7:34, Scott, you'll be the next caller, but although this is, of course, related to the cost of living, let's get into the world of finance. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. And why is it that the financial world, after record Q3 or third quarter revenue, is in awe of NVIDIA? Christian, good morning.
Good morning. Well, there's been lots of talk about an AI bubble, and will it keep growing? Well, NVIDIA, which is the powerhouse of the chip manufacturing behind all the computing power, or large parts of the computing power for the AI revolution, is the world's most valuable publicly traded company. It's just got a bit more valuable overnight. It beat Wall Street's expectations for its third quarter sales. The company has reported third quarter revenue, so this is over just a few months, of $57 billion. That's up 62% on the year, ahead of what people were forecasting. Income grew year on year to $31 billion, net income, that is. Now, this really is just the most extraordinary ride. The company's shares continue to grow in after-hours trading in the US. They have helped lift Asian markets overnight. They are anticipating even higher figures over the rest of the year for the fourth quarter. And, of course, those shares are likely now to continue to rise. Most analysts pointing out that such is the demand, the insatiable demand for what this company does, that whether or not there are some frothier parts of the AI market, there will be some failures, companies will come and go. It seems that NVIDIA has put down its roots and is here to stay.
Christian, my listener, Mrs. Jones in Clapham, and her husband, who always picks up a copy of City AM, by the way, when he comes into the city, how does it affect their lives? What are NVIDIA doing or making or manufacturing that affects ordinary folks' lives? Christian.
Whether you dip your toe into ChatGPT or Google Gemini for cake recipes, as my eight-year-old son does, which, by the way, are not always terribly accurate recipes, or whether you are at the most cutting-edge end of vast medical data analytics, whatever it is that AI is touching, you can draw a line back to NVIDIA and companies like NVIDIA that are responsible for the computing power, the insatiable computing power that underlies this entire revolution.
Right, let's look at some other headlines. Let's look at your headlines as well. Thamesmead, an area possibly unknown to some of our listeners. It's a massive housing estate out by Woolwich or Erith. When they first started excavating, they found the bones of dinosaurs there when they built all those housing developments. But there's a modern or futuristic move now.
Yeah, when I first moved to London, which was over 15 years ago, probably nearly 20 years ago, I lived in Woolwich, which was the only spot I could afford to rent in of my meagre salary at the time. Now it's changed beyond all recognition. And just to the east of that, Thamesmead, which is now set to benefit from a just under £2 billion project to extend the Docklands Light Railway to Thamesmead. This has been on the cards for a while. The Mayor, Sadiq Khan, has been pushing for it. We understand that Rachel Reeves will give the green light to this proposal. That is something that is going to be part of wider regeneration projects. It's going to cost about £1.7 billion, but they say that it will help unlock thousands of jobs and tens of thousands of new homes in the area. Now, I'm sure there will always be some people who say, well, not in my backyard. But goodness me, the capital needs them, and spreading east seems to be a sensible thing to do. So Sadiq Khan says this is amounts to a vote of confidence in London, but he's not satisfied. He still wants other plans, including Baker-Lew extension and the North-South Crossrail. Well, I think for now we'll have to be satisfied with the Thamesmead DLR extension.
Fascinating fact about Thamesmead, it's the movie where they shot a lot of the movie A Clockwork Orange was shot around Thamesmead. I just thought I'd share that with you as well. Let's finish by going onto the high street, or what's left of it, and what was once known as WH Smith. That's also on your front page. What's the news there?
Yes, well, I mean, it's a shadow of its former self, isn't it? But the boss of this giant, well, used to be a giant, sold off fair chunks of itself, but it remains one of the best-known retailers. The chief executive has quit with immediate effect after the conclusion of an investigation into the firm's accounting practices. Now, this review was commissioned after they sort of fessed up to a fairly major accounting misstatement, which wiped tens of millions of pounds off the FTSE 250 listed firm. They were basically booking sales that hadn't yet come through the door, to put it like that. The chief executive have said that he now understands the scale of the situation, and that whilst this was something which happened in the North American division, he has to take ultimate responsibility. Analysts have said that no chief executive could survive what one has described as such a catastrophic episode, wiped off about £500 million from the value of the company when this was revealed. The investigation has concluded, and as one of the consequences of that, chief executive has quit with immediate effect.
Christian, we'll talk around the same time tomorrow. Many more details on those stories, of course, with City AM. Christian May is its editor-in-chief, 7:39. Scott, coming to you in a moment. Just a couple of emails and texts that are coming in. Will in Saddleworth says, the only thing I want to hear from Rachel Reeves would be her resignation. Same sort of subject. This comes in from John. Rachel Reeves, when she talks, it reminds me of just blah, blah, blah. I'm really nervous about next week. This comes in. Oh, Tony says, don't let's forget, when we go to the supermarket, the packaging sizes have changed. They're all smaller. And Dilip, I wonder if it's the Dilip with whom we spoke earlier in the week. Food prices do not reflect inflation figures. I run a convenience store. Food prices go up weekly. Cadbury's chocolate, 125, now 195. Soup, 99p, now 189. Bisto, 99p, now £2.99. Customers are commenting, gone up again. Scott's in Manchester. What's the reality as you see it, Scott? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I feel it as well. I'm someone who doesn't have a family. I'm single. But I would like to give a bit more perspective on myself, if I may, very quickly.
Sure.
I am 6'7", and I am a big guy.
You are, yeah.
Right?
Goodness me.
So, I feel it because I feel it because I have to eat differently to people. But again, I get it. I don't have a family, so people have families to feed, and I understand that.
What do you mean by you have to eat differently to people? What does that mean?
Well, I feel like because I'm bigger, I use more energy, at the risk of going into it more than that, because the doctors have always told me, and nurses are like, you know, you need to lose a bit of weight, because I am carrying some, admittedly. Mm-hmm. There's other reasons for that, obviously, I'm not going to get into now, mm-hmm. But
sure.
I was told I should be 15 stone,
right,
to give people an example, and I'm not. But I was then told by a nurse that that's not enough weight. I would be
might I ask what you do weigh? You don't have to answer what you do weigh. You don't have to answer the question.
I think it's about 27, 28 stone, which is about closer to £400.
There
for those
you
who
are
use that metric.
Carrying a lot of weight, my friend.
But yeah, like I said, I am those 6'7". My family is naturally a big people in terms of like width as well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of me that is me, essentially.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to answer this question. Might I ask, what waist trousers do you take?
52 inches.
Right. Okay. Well, it's not for me to tell you. I think you know that you need to shed a bit here.
Yeah. So I feel, what I'm saying is I do feel it as well. And the thing is, though, is I want people to also recognize and realize that the way we vote as well for governments is incredibly important into the way that things obviously change for us when it comes to inflation. So, yes, food prices have gone up over the past few years quite a lot, I would say, relative to, let's say, 10, 20 years ago, maybe.
Right.
But I also feel like, though, that that's not necessarily to do with inflation. It's to do with the supermarkets.
What you mean the way that they're putting the... Because obviously it's not like their profits are declining. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the way that obviously prices have gone up for like the main stuff that we're being told we need to eat, you know, to be healthier, and other things that we need to eat to obviously help us just eat better in general. You know,
well, let's talk about eating. But what did you have for dinner last night, might I ask?
I actually didn't eat dinner for last night, funnily enough. No, because I had some chicken wings for lunch.
Right.
And that's literally all I had. I had a bag of chicken wings.
Right.
And for breakfast, what did I have for breakfast? I can't remember now, for being honest. But
typically, do you like a bowl of cornflakes, or do you have a full English, or what is a typical?
I had some cereal.
You're telling me you existed on cereal and a bucket of chicken wings all day yesterday?
But in also the caveat to that is because I have an office job, I don't tend to move around that much as well. If I was in my physical job that was in a few years ago, it'd be a different story. I'd be
all right. Look after yourself. I think you and I both know that getting a few pounds off would help. Scott, thank you for your input on that. Louise, you'll be the next caller. But as ever in the morning, we have to give you all the stories you need to know as you start your day, or for some of you, of course, come in having done your shift. And this is a particularly distressing one. A former police officer, one of Britain's most notorious serial sex offenders, been convicted of abusing a young girl, having written a confession letter to his mother when he was 17. Details now, LBC's Fraser Knight. Fraser, good morning.
Nick, the serial rapist David Carrick was found guilty yesterday of 9 more offences relating to 2 victims, which we can add to the decades of abuse we know he inflicted on women, starting in the 1980s against a 12-year-old girl he repeatedly molested, through to his almost 2 decades as a serving police officer using his warrant card to trap women in toxic relationships where he coerced and raped them. Detective Superintendent Ian Moore from Hertfordshire Police led the investigation.
One of the cases relates to conduct while he was a police officer. So again, it's very similar conduct to what he did to some of his other victims in relationships as well. But the earlier investigation in 1990, that obviously brings a new element to the offending, and obviously just shows that it goes back further than we originally thought.
Now, Carrick was already behind bars serving 36 life sentences before this trial for his campaign of abuse that he pleaded guilty to almost 3 years ago, of more than 70 sexual offences, which of course cast a huge shadow over policing, further damaging public trust after the crimes of his colleague Wayne Cousins from the same unit in the Metropolitan Police. But Senior Prosecutor Shilpa Shah says there was one key bit of evidence from when he attacked his earlier victim that helped secure his conviction, and if police had known about it sooner, it could have stopped him.
She gave a compelling account of what he had done to her at the time, and there was in fact a letter that David Carrick had written himself admitting partly his behaviour towards her. It's clear that David Carrick's behaviour escalated as he grew older. He's been controlling and abusive for almost 4 decades now.
That confession letter was only found in Carrick's medical records 2 years ago, despite it being given to a doctor in 1990. It said his victim wasn't crazy and was telling the truth about what he did. He even offered to go away and never be seen again. And Nick, this adds to the long list of missed opportunities that police have since found to stop him offending and to stop him continuing in the police, including multiple complaints against him. Investigating officers have said things would have been very different if they'd known about the letter in 1990, but they did point to safeguarding measures that have been introduced since then. David Carrick had 14 victims that we now know about, but Ian Moore from Hertfordshire Police tells me he thinks there could still be more.
There's no more current open investigations, but I still believe there are people out there that have been offended against by David Carrick.
That was, as you heard, Detective Superintendent Ian Moore from Hertfordshire Police to conclude Fraser Knight's report. Louise, you'll be the next caller on the cost of living. Hope you can hold it to the other side of the news. And then later in the show, with his economic woes, would it be best if Sir Keir Starmer stood down? Well, here's one of his colleagues, Labour MP for Norwich South, Clive Lewis, asked on the BBC, would he stand down to give a safe seat to Andy Burnham?
And I'd have to obviously consult with my wife as well and family. But you know what? You know, if I'm going to sit here and say, you know, country before party, party before personal ambition, then yes, I have to say yes, don't I?
Currently, if it is love's Labour's lost, could you fall in love with Labour again under Andy Burnham? And by the way, if you're living in Manchester, of course, Greater Manchester area, where he is the mayor, him as PM, what does it mean to you? 7:46, LBC News headlines now, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he signed into law the bill to release more files on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. American military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine as part of efforts to end the war with Russia. And defence officials are exploring military options should a Russian spy ship move further into UK waters. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many, some wintry showers for northern Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are queues on the M25 anti-clockwise. One lane is blocked after junction 17 for Maple Cross because of an accident. There are also queues on the M25 clockwise. There's a lane closed, the junction 5 for the M26 because the car has broken down. It's very slow on the M1 southbound. The car's broken down between junction 11 for Luton and junction 10 for Luton Airport. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry. That's because of technical problems. It's very slow on the A2 westbound from Cobham through to the Ebbsfleet turnoff. That's after a lorry broke down earlier, so all the lanes are back open there. There are queues in New Eltham on the A20 westbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident between Flamingo Park and Green Lane. And there are queues in Brent Cross on the North Circular westbound. It's partly blocked at Staples Corner because of an investigation.
This is LBC.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. Little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
At this time of year, we know you're snowed under. But with Halfords' biggest ever Black Friday sale, you handle the shopping, we'll handle the saving. Grab up to 50% off our motoring and cycling must-haves, including tools, in-car tech, bikes and more. Whether it's Christmas gifts, everyday essentials, or just an excuse to treat yourself, we've got you covered. Pop to your local Halfords today or shop online. Offer subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £100,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm tomorrow and you could get a call with £100,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
9 minutes before eight, we'll come back to talking about the economy, but this could be a move to help some of you. Hundreds of pounds to be saved by parents as regards free breakfast clubs. Here with more details, Labour MP and Minister for Children and Families, Josh McAllister. Thanks for coming on, Minister. What is it that you're announcing this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. People will be aware that the government are taking action on the cost of living. One of the big measures that we've got is to roll out free breakfast clubs in all primary schools in England. And today we are starting the process for selecting the next 2,000 schools that will be picked for this. The first batch of those in 500 today, targeting schools in particularly deprived areas. And this helps with parents dropping off their children at the start of the school day, so it takes a bit of pressure off the family. It also improves attendance and attainment for pupils. And we're also announcing today that the next wave will come with additional funding so that we can roll this out as effectively as possible for families.
What does that funding look like? How much are we talking about?
So we're increasing the amount an average school will get by about 28%. The per pupil amount is a pound, but then on top of that, there is funding for the school for the staffing.
So just kind of, that's £1 per child per breakfast, roughly.
Correct.
Right. That's right.
There's funding on top of that for the school in terms of running the breakfast club, staffing it, heating costs, and all of that. And the first wave, I should say, has been rolled out really successfully. We've learned some of the lessons from it in terms of how to make it even more effective, which is why we're putting this extra funding into the programme today as well.
Well, you say it's been rolled out fairly successfully. Earlier in the show, we were talking about economic pressures in the country, and I was speaking with Danielle, who's a single or lone parent in Manchester. She was talking about the problems, actually, that she's had, and she actually filed this question for you.
I would ask him how they're going to make sure that if they are going to implement this free breakfast club, that they fund it correctly, that so that schools can actually feel confident to take that up. Because what I've heard, even from the school that my daughter goes to, is that the funding that's on offer at the moment is completely impractical and will make those primary schools, who are already struggling, struggle even further. It's not an offer that my school are in a position to make at the moment. So I am absolutely not saving a penny on breakfast club.
Your club, sorry, why is it not eligible?
They haven't registered, signed up, gone through all the protocols that it must take. It must be, you know, you have to jump through hoops to go through it.
Not trying to ambush you or hijack you, but that's Danielle with her 9-year-old daughter in Manchester. Why is it not working for her, Minister?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question and I welcome it. We have been rolling out free breakfast clubs at only a small number of schools to start with. I don't know whether the school that she was referring to is one that's in that programme.
I sense it's not, Minister, but do go on.
So we're funding free breakfast clubs across the whole country. That's the place we're going to get to. We're extending it today. We are putting extra money into the programme, an extra 28% on average. And even in the pilot areas where we've been doing the first wave of these, it has been effective at getting uptake. So children are being dropped off. They're getting a nourishing breakfast. Schools are on board with it. We have learned from that first wave to make it even better. That's why the extra money is going in. So we're working hard to get this right. And I think the last time I was on speaking to you, I was also mentioning that we've got these partnerships with Weetabix and Morrison's. Yes. And Magic Breakfast, which is sort of bringing down the cost for schools as well. So it's a wraparound programme. We're doing everything we can to get the cost right so that we can help with the cost of living for families.
And do you have a percentage of how many of these schools now have the opportunity for breakfast clubs, and how far you have to get, you and your colleagues have to go?
By September 2026, 11% of pupils will be in schools that have got a free breakfast club, and we're ramping this up. So, you know, the next wave is 2,000, so it's going to increase quite rapidly.
All right. You're Minister for Children and Families, so I'm sure you're looking at the economic data as closely as any of your colleagues. Why would it appear that people have no confidence in the economy and the government as regards handling of the economy?
Well, look, we do see mixed messages on this, don't we? Because there are signs from business confidence which are positive. We had the welcome news yesterday that inflation is coming down. And we're dealing with lots of quite deep, challenging economic problems as a country. Low productivity, high levels of debt, historically low levels of growth. Getting out of that doom loop for the economy is not going to take one or two budgets. It's going to take a bit of time. And the government's strategy, I mean, I can go through it with you, but is basically about trying to reverse some of those fundamental things.
All I would say is we are going through challenging times, but we're at 3.6%, which was in part hailed by the Chancellor yesterday. In France, inflation is 0.5, and in Germany, it's 1.2. Why are we faring so much worse than them?
Yeah. So inflation has been stickier in the UK than elsewhere. We really need to get inflation down. That's why we're...
But why? Why would we seem to be performing so badly against some of our European friends?
I don't know what the underlying reasons for the UK's stickiness of inflation is, but our interest rates also need to come down, right? So there are big relationships between how we get interest rates down, how we get inflation down. It improves the cost of living for people and the money that they have in their pockets. That is the central focus for the government. And I think it's a good point just to dwell on for the budget next week, which is that we've got some choices as a country about which path to take. You know, either we slash loads of government spending, which means slashing investment in the UK in things like new schools. I've previously spoken to you about RAC and school buildings falling down. Energy infrastructure, which will produce the affordable energy we need to bring down people's bills, and we go back into the low investment loop that we've been in, or we take the approach of borrowing money in a way that we can't afford beyond our means, and that pushes up the cost of borrowing. And we're trying to stick to this path, which is the right one for the country, of investing in the long term and sticking to the fiscal rules to get the economy growing so we can give people money back.
While I have you on the line, again reminding listeners, you're Minister for Children and Families, what do you make of the report half of parents regularly allow their child a day off school if they feel too upset to go in? Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't agree with that, no. I've not seen the report.
Okay.
We have seen a big improvement since we came to power in school attendance. Millions of extra days of children showing up at school. It is so important for children to be in school. And for, you know, my own personal view on this is it's like an essential part of the social contract. Kids being in school, learning, if they're off, you know, every Friday, then they're losing a fifth of their entire education. So children really need to be in school. We need to do stuff to make sure that children can get to school and be there successfully. So special education needs reform, free breakfast clubs and all of that, but they have to be in school.
And finally, what would you say to what is reported to be a growing band of people, or your colleagues, I should say, who thinks because of the economic woes and confidence in the government, it's time for Sir Keir to step aside? Indeed, one of your colleagues, Clive Lewis, is reported to say he would give up his seat to Andy Burnham if he was to become the party leader. Minister.
I can't remember exactly where Clive's constituency is.
Norwich South.
It's a long way away from Manchester. And I say that as somebody who's an MP in Cumbria. Look, the Prime Minister is only recently become the Prime Minister. He's the leader of our party. He secured a historic victory.
We know all of the above, Minister. What would you say to what is meant to be the growing dissent, and certainly someone now saying, I'll stand down if Andy Burnham will become the party leader? Total lack of confidence in Sir Keir. Why?
No. Look, Clive's got his views. You know, the Labour Party's a broad church. It's not going to surprise anybody to know that Clive is critical of the party's leadership. The sort of earlier answers I gave in this interview about what we're trying to do with the economy and getting the UK out of that doom loop, that is the central mission for the government, so we can improve.
Why did you reference, lastly, the geographical distance between Norwich South and Manchester? What was the relevance of that when you asked where his constituency was?
Well, it just doesn't seem like me to be a particularly serious suggestion that the mayor of Greater Manchester, as I think you know, Nick, that was probably why I was referencing it.
Grateful for your time, Josh McAllister, talking about the continued rollout out of these breakfast clubs, £450 a year potential saving. Mr. McAllister is Minister for Children and Families. He's taking us to 8 o'clock. LBC News headlines are next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, President Trump says he signed a bill approving the release of files relating to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The US Justice Department now has 30 days to release them. Separately, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has until the end of today to respond to a US request for an interview about his ties to Epstein. Dr. Gavin Ashenden is a former chaplain to the late Queen and says it's unlikely that Andrew will accept the invitation.
First of all, he doesn't interview very well. But secondly, he's under no legal obligation to do this, and so there's no advantage to him. He can't prove that he wasn't involved, and so the great danger is that he incriminates himself in some way. It's most unlikely that he'll be advised to do it.
Andrew has always strongly denied any wrongdoing. Pentagon officials are expected to meet President Zelensky in Ukraine later to explore restarting peace talks with Russia. Unconfirmed reports suggest the US and Russia have prepared a new plan involving major concessions from Kyiv. It's claimed the proposals include ceding territory and limiting the size of Ukraine's army. Russia has accused the government of militaristic hysteria after it was revealed that a spy ship is on the edge of UK waters. The Yantar is currently north of Scotland and is said to be gathering intelligence. The Defence Secretary John Healey has said military options are available if it sails closer. More schools in England are now eligible to apply for the Free Breakfast Club scheme. Primaries, in which more than 40% of pupils receive free school meals, will be able to sign up. But critics say it's unviable because the funding doesn't cover the cost of it. Children's Minister Josh McAllister has just told Nick that they know of the programme's initial teething problems.
We are putting extra money into the programme, an extra 28% on average. And even in the pilot areas where we've been doing the first wave of these, it has been effective at getting uptake. So children are being dropped off, they're getting a nourishing breakfast. Schools are on board with it. We have learned from that first wave to make it even better. That's why the extra money is going in. So we're working hard to get this right.
And the Higher Education Watchdog has warned almost half of England's universities will be in deficit by next summer. The regulator says despite thousands of job losses across the sector, tough decisions remain ahead. Universities UK has also warned that the finances of universities will be damaged by a tax on the income from overseas students. The Department for Education says it is taking action to put the sector on a secure footing. In the city, the FTSE 100 had just reopened at 95.07. It closed down 44 yesterday. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Some wintry showers will continue for the north of Scotland with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Oh, yeah?
Keep the extra guests entertained this winter with EETV.
So I can watch all me crime dramas.
While the rest of us have the football on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix Now, TNT Sports, and Discovery Plus. All powered by EE's ultra-fast full fiber.
Sign me up.
Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine, Thursday the 20th of November. Time for a change at the top. Not speaking about Manchester United or any other football club, rather the government and the growing sense among Labour MPs, one of whom has put his head above the proverbial parapet and said, I'll stand down if it gets Andy Burnham in. I'm asking you, particularly if you're a Labour faithful, would that change your way, your view of the party, the way you might vote? In other news and of great concern.
From Russia with love. Fly to you.
Well, you're not flying, Matt. You're actually on the ships. This is the UK warning to the Moscow, the spy ship that's targeting RAF planes with lasers. We'll give you more details on that. We'll return to the story I discussed briefly with the minister. Half of parents regularly allow their child a day off school if they feel too upset. What happens in your house if your child or your children says, I'm too upset to go to school? Indeed, when you were a child, would your mum and or dad have allowed that? Plus the report that says, coming back to our children, BBC trans bias, as in trans issues, bias has hurt our children. Report hundreds of parents. We'll give you more on that. And for me, my story of the day.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
As a court case deals with an overweight naked cyclist who was punched to the ground by a motorcyclist on what's called World Naked Bike Ride Day, I'll be asking, have you ever ridden your bicycle stark naked as the day you were born?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Talk about being saddle sore. Let's get to other matters. And in the first hour, we discussed what would seem to be pretty woeful sentiment across much of the country as to the way the government is handling the economy. And you read, and occasionally you pick up, that there is growing dissent among Sakir's own troops. Well, it took a bit of a move forward yesterday with Labour MP for Norwich South, Clive Lewis, addressing the leadership questions over Sakir's. He was asked by the BBC if he would stand aside in his safe seat to make way for Andy Burnham, Mayor of Greater Manchester, to be Prime Minister.
And I'd have to obviously consult with my wife as well and family. But you know what? You know, if I'm going to sit here and say, you know, country before party, party before personal ambition, then yes, I have to say yes, don't I?
My LBC colleague Tom Swarbrick put those comments from Mr. Lewis to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, yesterday, who you'll remember was in this studio taking calls just last Friday, as I recall, days after the briefing from Number 10 about his, Mr. Streeting's, leadership ambitions. The Health Secretary said it was a strange thing for Clive Lewis to say.
I've got a lot of time for Andy, and I think we need our best players on the pitch. And whether he's doing that as Mayor of Greater Manchester or whether he wants to come back into Parliament in the next general election, that is an issue for Andy. I think it's a bit of a peculiar thing for Clive to have said to his own constituents, mm-hmm. I'm not interested in being your MP. I'm happy to do a deal with someone. I would just say from personal experience, don't take your voters for granted.
I mentioned Andy Burnham, of course, in the context of the last week that you have had and speculation about your future. You were on LBC on Friday with my colleague, Nick, and doing a phone-in. And I have to say, I'm not blowing smoke up your fundament. I have to say their reaction was sort of unanimous. that you would make a better Prime Minister than Keir Starmer. Are they wrong?
That is very kind of them, but I'm absolutely not in that position, and I'm very proud of the job that I've been given to do. There is nothing I'd rather be doing more than this.
So they are, for now, they're wrong.
LBC listeners are never wrong, unless they're telling you that my performance was absolutely terrible, I was talking out my backside, and that everything's going in the wrong direction. So I'll take the praise. You've got to take praise where you can get it in politics. I mean, we're about as popular as tax collectors and traffic wardens at the moment.
Wes Freeting speaking with my colleague Tom Swarbrick. Let's bring into the conversation Professor Sir John Curtis. Now, polling expert, leading sociologist and professor of politics at the University of Strathclyde. What might the impact be of the arrival of Andy Burnham? Sir John, good morning.
Well, there are two questions you have to ask yourself. The first is, well, what is the current popularity of Mr. Burnham? And what difference might he make? And then the second question is, how might the Labour Party succeed in getting from here to there? So let's take them in turn. So there is no doubt that Mr. Burnham is relatively popular. Indeed, the most recent YouGov rating suggests that there are as many people who regard him favourably as unfavourably. The equivalent statistic for Sir Keir Starmer is around minus 50, i.e. 50% more people think of him unfavourably than favourably. And indeed, given that at the moment none of our party leaders are particularly popular, because they're all now leading parties that are minorities in our society, Mr. Burnham's popularity is quite remarkable. The second thing I think one could say about Mr. Burnham is that he is an effective communicator. You know, there is a simple reason why he is probably the best known of the Metro mayors, is that because he is the one who is the most effective on the media, etc., and who seems at least is able to sell a good story about what's happening in Manchester. And one of the complaints about Sir Keir is he's not a terribly good communicator and doesn't give a clear sense of direction to his government. So those are the possibilities. The difficulty, of course, is that Mr. Burnham is not a member of the House of Commons. So the question is, how does he get there? We've had this interesting suggestion that maybe Clive Lewis might want to stand down. But then there are two things you have to worry about. The first is that Mr. Burnham's ability to become a parliamentary candidate would lie in the hands of the National Executive Committee of the Labour Party, which Sir Keir Starmer currently controls. And secondly, it lies in the hands of the electorate. And given Labour's current dire position in the opinion polls, which of course is the problem in the first place, it's not entirely sure that the party can afford to be having any by-elections that are anything other than involuntary. And then, of course, there's the small matter of, well, if indeed there is a putsch, what is the fallout from that putsch? Does it make Labour look more divided? Or is Sir Keir Starmer persuaded to stand down and clear the path for somebody else, including perhaps Mr. Burnham? You can see that although there is perhaps the prospect of being able to put into place somebody who might be a more effective politician than the current Prime Minister, getting from here to there could well prove to be rather difficult.
Lastly, Sir John, it was around 16, 17 months ago that you were leading coverage of the last general election on networks across the country about the success that Sir Keir and his party enjoyed. Why has it all gone wrong?
Well, you have to remember the thinness of what they achieved last year. They only got 35% of the vote. That's the lowest vote share of any majority government, let alone one with a landslide. Only around actually one in five of the electorate turned out and voted for Labour. It was Reform who did most of the damage to the Conservatives, not the Labour Party. And even at that point, Sir Keir Starmer was never popular as an opposition leader. People were complaining they didn't know what he stood for. So the seeds of the Labour Party's current difficulties were already there, given, as we already knew 16, 17 months ago, that the government was inheriting a very difficult gig. The state of the economy, the state of the health service, the debates about immigration. It always looked as a very serious risk that Labour's popularity would fall away. And then the question was, where would they go? Well, the answer is, at the moment, at least, Reform and the Greens.
As ever, Sir John, thank you. Professor Sir John Curtis, Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde. Listening, George Pascoe Watson, who is a broadcaster, was political editor for The Sun newspaper, now a partner at Shillings. Right, George, if you accept that it is a bit of a case of Labour's lost at the moment, what would an Andy Burnham leadership bring to the equation? Morning, George.
Nick, it's always difficult following Sir John Curtis, a man who knows it all and said it all. But I think that the Labour Party members of Parliament, and of course that's the audience we really have to think about here, because they are the ones who get to choose, as well as members of the Labour Party, their next leader, they are worried for their jobs. As Sir John has just pointed out, it was a very, very strong number, the government majority, but it's a very wafer-thin one, and they all can see the polls every single day, and they can see how unpopular they are, and therefore nothing concentrates an MP's mind greater than the prospect of a P45 in the next general election. So they are tempted to look at a new leader. Andy Burnham is quite popular amongst the nation, according to opinion polls, but of course Andy Burnham is a brilliant communicator, very charismatic, I know him very well, but he is also somebody who has cleverly kept himself out of the media most of the time and then comes up for air when he wants to make a point and then retreats. When you're Keir Starmer, if you're today's Prime Minister, you have to perform every single day. The Prime Minister is out this morning on an education visit with the Education Secretary in schools. Tonight he'll be getting on a plane with my former colleagues, the political journalists, to South Africa. He's never off. And when you're never off, you're exposed to the media the whole time. And the chances of you keeping popularity are very slim.
George, you've been charting the fortunes of the Labour Party for a number of years, perhaps not so long as Sir John, but where is he on the Labour dial, Andy Burnham? Is he a Blair? Is he a Brown? Is he a Corbyn? Is he a Wes? Where is he?
Well, there's that famous gag about Andy Burnham going into a bar and making the point that, you know, he would drink anything because you can't actually pin him down. He's very, very clever in that respect. You know, he's got the ability to be a political chameleon, and that's what you need, actually, with all the different audiences within the Labour Party. So I think he would be certainly to the left of Keir Starmer. And I also think that many Labour MPs believe that's the way that their future lies. Why? Because we now have a huge surge of Green support. We have the Scott Nats and the Welsh Nats all moving to the left. There is definitely a move to the left in politics, but also to the right. And so I don't think Andy Burnham could ever go to the right. So he's going to go to the left if he became leader of the Labour Party. However, Sir John has ably pointed out how many obstacles stand in the way of an anointed successor to Keir Starmer. And Keir has already made it clear, as you know, 2 weeks ago, he made it very, very clear that he would stand and fight his ground.
George, always good speaking with you. George Pascoe-Watson was political editor at The Sun, broadcaster now, partner at Shillings. Thanks for your input on that. Calls already coming in. It is Love's Labour's loss, but would the situation improve? Could you fall in love with your party if you're a supporter under Andy Burnham, particularly if you're living in the Manchester, Greater Manchester area, any of those great towns and around there, Bury and Oldham and all the others? Do give me a call on that. And immediately after the news, unfortunately, it's not a case of...
From Russia with love, I fly to you.
As a Russian spy ship sails close to British territorial waters and points lasers at RAF pilots in their cockpits. More on that to come. It's 8.15 LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he signed a bill approving the release of files relating to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. US officials are expected to meet President Zelensky in Ukraine later to explore restarting peace talks with Russia. And the government is expanding its free breakfast club scheme in England. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Some wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The queues in Ickenham on the A40 going into town. There's one lane blocked at the Swakeley's roundabout because the lorry has broken down on the exit slip road. On the North Circular, westbound, there are queues because of an investigation between the M1 at Staples Corner and the Neasden Interchange, so one lane is closed. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry because of technical problems. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line between Cockfosters and Acton Town because of problems with the signals. There's also no service on the Piccadilly line between Rowners Lane and Uxbridge. That's because of the poor rail conditions. There are minor delays on the entire Northern line. That's after a train broke down earlier. And also on the trains, Southwestern Railway services aren't stopping at Queenstown Road. That's because of some problems with the signals.
This is LBC.
Save the Children is inviting you to the UK's most spectacular Christmas party. That's right, Christmas Jumper Day is back on Thursday the 11th of December, and Save the Children want every school and workplace in the country to get silly and donate for a seriously good cause.
It couldn't be easier. Sign up, get your jumpers out, and this December, join the millions of people creating lasting change with Save the Children. Sign up now at christmasjumperday.org.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London, on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Lidl, we won't be beaten on price on a range of Christmas mains. Like our Birchwood Fresh British Medium Whole Turkey, Smoked Gammon Joint and more. All at an unbeatable price. Lidl. More to value.
Selected products on sale from 27th of the 11th and 19th of the 12th and price match in most major UK supermarkets until 24th of the 12th. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. While stocks last, exclusions apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get into your reaction. A change at the top, the idea that Clive Lewis, who you have to say, so he's a Labour MP, he's in Norwich South. He's never been a signed-up fan of Sir Keir Starmer. We have to put that in context. But he's saying because of the state of the country, because of the state of the party, indeed putting, he says, country before self. Once he's cleared it with his wife and his family, he would be prepared to stand down in what is effectively a should be a safe Labour seat. You never know these days. If Andy Burnham was to come from Manchester, stand in Norwich, and then go on to lead the party. As we heard from Sir John Curtis, there are a few hurdles there to clear. But if you are a Labour supporter, is that the level? This, of course, comes with the backdrop of the latest polling figures out from yesterday. You have Reform on 27% support, then Labour all the way back at 19, and now just narrow leads on the Conservatives and the Greens, who are both on 17%. So 27 for Reform plays 19 for Labour, then the other two big ones, as it were. I don't even have figures for the Liberal Democrats, by the way. The Conservatives and the Greens on 17%. Something has to change, but particularly if you're in Manchester, what do you make? But let's turn to social media to pick up on what you're saying of this. And Matt in Lincoln has picked up something that George Pascoe Watson told us, and I agree with you. Let me read it, Matt, so that I'm sorry, I agree with you, I'm going to tell everyone else. George Pascoe Watson referencing Keir Starmer flying out to South Africa. Is it me, or does this Prime Minister just love globetrotting? I'm constantly hearing leaving this country to fly to goodness knows where, so no wonder the country is falling to bits. Well, the other way of looking at it, of course, if he's doing so badly, it's probably better that we do have him out of the country. But one of the newspapers worked out last week, I think it was the Sun, but it doesn't matter, that he's done nearly 160,000 air miles since he became Prime Minister. And in this period of time, this will be his 18th foreign trip, 18th. In a similar period, if you take Mrs. Thatcher, I haven't got figures for Tony Blair, but if you take Mrs. Thatcher, who found an economy in absolute rags and tried to fight her way through, she took 8. And I would suggest, and I'm looking forward to my next opportunity to interview Sir Keir, why he feels it necessary to be out of the country so often. He undoubtedly has a better time of it when he's out of the country. There's no question about that. Because I think he has performed well over the Ukraine war. I think he has performed well in Washington. We've seen that. But shouldn't he spend some of his time... Wouldn't it be quite an idea to spend some of your time in Workington and not Washington? Might that be the idea? We're going to come back to that. We've got a guest we can turn to on this very concerning story about the British warning to Moscow as a so-called spy ship is close to British waters targeting RAF air crew. Defence Secretary John Healey speaking at a Downing Street press conference yesterday.
We deployed a Royal Navy frigate and RAF planes to monitor and track this vessel's every move, during which the Yantar directed lasers at our pilots. That Russian action is deeply dangerous.
Let's turn to Mark DeVore, who's senior lecturer at the University of St Andrews School of International Relations and a fellow at the Royal Navy Strategic Studies Centre and an expert on European security. The first question, the easy answer is ask them, but why is Russia or Moscow doing this, do you imagine? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on. The easy answer is that Russia is engaging in a systematic campaign of targeting our undersea cables. They've cut quite a few cables using Shadow Fleet tankers, and they're exploring and trying to identify the critical vulnerabilities in the UK's cables. Those are cables carrying oil, gas, and data. This is the third time that Yantar has been in British waters within the last year, and obviously they were trying to show that they did not like how closely we were following them and the types of warnings that we were giving them not to interfere with our critical underwater infrastructure.
How aggressive is the action of reportedly pointing lasers at RAF pilots?
It's extremely aggressive. Now, while non-blinding lasers are not banned by international law of armed conflict, using a laser against civil aviation is illegal by most civil aviation accords and also by national civil aviation legislation. So what they did was highly provocative. Now, to my mind, we have not yet heard what type of laser it was, but regardless in terms of whether it was a deliberate dazzling laser or overeager crew members used a laser rangefinder or something like that, it was a highly provocative action, and we should respond accordingly.
What should that response look like?
I think that Defense Secretary Hawley, in changing rules of engagement, is on the right path. And certainly we shouldn't announce what rules of engagement we have implemented to the Russians. Now, things we could do in the future that would be proportional responses in the same way would be sending out fast jets, breaking the sound barrier, causing sonic booms, which would be highly disruptive to their operations, but once again, not illegal, following them very closely in a similar way, and being prepared to take similar actions against them in other theaters should they continue with their current trend of activity.
Lastly, do you see this escalating or de-escalating, Mr. DeVore?
I think that that very much depends on our response. When the Russians do something in this sort of gray zone of warfare, and our response is perceived to be weak or dithering, then that invites further escalation from them. On the other hand, when the response is relatively rapid and decisive, they stop. Probably the best example of that was December of 2024, when the Russians used a Shadow Fleet tanker to cut the energy cable connecting Finland and Estonia. The Finns seized the ship. And the Russians thereafter ceased their escalation of cutting cables in the Eastern Baltic. I think that is the real message, that we have to impose costs on them, and if we don't, it will escalate.
Grateful for your time today. Thank you, Mark DeVore, your senior lecturer at the University of St Andrews School of International Relations and a fellow at the Royal Navy Strategic Studies Centre. Thanks for your input on that. Calls, though, are coming in on the idea of a change at the top here in the UK, a change in leader of Labour and Prime Minister, Jim in Stevenage. Jim, your reaction to that. Good morning.
Well, I don't like Labour at all. I don't care what leader they've got. They'll do nothing to improve things. I mean, this lot are the worst shower I've ever seen in my life.
Even worse than the last lot, would you say?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't like what Blair's done. I think a lot of the stuff that he's done, he's not done us any good. But
right.
At least Blair was running things. At least he was trying, you know, he appeared more competent, you could say.
Yes.
But this lot, I mean, I'd rather put Zippy and Bunga in charge of the country than this lot. I really mean that, seriously.
Well, I don't think Zippy and Bunga are currently standing for election, whereas, of course, Keir Starmer and others are. What do you, as we learnt about 10 minutes ago, what do you make of the fact that he's leaving the country again?
Well, they call him Never Hear Keir, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's a globalist, isn't he? You've got to remember, like, to me, he's anti-British. He wants this idea of one global state. That's his whole mentality to me. I mean, you know, he goes on about, you know, trade deals, we have trade deals and that. He just don't care about Britain, in my opinion, and I think everybody can see that. He's anti-British to me.
All right, Jim, very strong views. Who was the last politician you admired?
To be quite honest, I wasn't very interested in politics at all. I just got on with everything, go to work, etc., etc. And it's only because these lot are so incompetent and so useless, it made me pay attention, and I've delved into a lot of stuff.
So you've never really been one that you've admired?
No.
Okay, fair enough, thank you. Let's come back to this idea that the Prime Minister is travelling so much. Ryan in Windsor, Keir Starmer, I think, is constantly abroad looking for his next big job while using the PM post as a stepping stone to earn ridiculous amounts of money, a bit like Tony Blair. Ben in Bristol, regarding his travels, it's not him per se. He's better off out of the country. Wish he'd stay out. But it's the amount of delegates that go also, allegedly over 400 to COP. What's the cost to the taxpayer? Justified or a jolly? It's contempt for the UK citizens. And on the subject of the fact that the Russians are coming into our waters and then sailing out and shining lasers into cockpits of RAF aircraft. M in Harrow, it shows how weak we are as a country. Other nations, including Russia and Iran, would have just seized the ship and impounded it. The ship isn't in international waters, it was in UK waters. The Royal Navy should at least board the vessel. Be careful what you're asking for there, because that, to me, is considerable escalation, and would we want that? Collins in Eltham, let's come back to the idea of Andy Burnham, new Labour leader, new PM. How does that sit with you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's a nice autumn morning.
Is it down in south-east London? I might experience it later. Good.
We've got a guest appearance for the Sun. Anyway, moving on to the important subject.
Nice and crisp in SE9. I imagine you're in SE9.
Indeed. Yes. You know the manor well, I believe. Your old stomping ground.
I went to school around the corner. Yes, on you go.
Fair play. We can crawl along in the traffic at times now before we get completely gridlocked. Anyway, as the subject we were saying, Starmer, he's not up to the job. You've got to lead from the front, like the captain of a ship. Yep. I think it's a good idea to have Mr. Burnham in charge.
What do you like about him politically, then, would you say, Colin?
He seems to be in touch with the people, and the thing I'd like to see, we've heard it for four decades or more, Nick, is this Northern powerhouse. I think Mr. Burnham might be able to deliver this Northern powerhouse before we get completely gridlocked in the southeast.
Oh, that's interesting, because I'm just going back through prime ministers. We had Rishi Sunak, and he was Richmond in Yorkshire, but Boris Johnson, of course, was in them, and then Theresa May was in Maidenhead. Maybe it would be someone whose roots are totally in the north is actually going to switch the north on.
That's the key point, Nick. I mean, are we going to live long enough to see, you know, half a dozen politicians deliver on something?
Have a safe one. Between the A2 and the A20 there in SE9, Colin, I might bump into you one day on Eltham High Street, what's left of it, coming up after the news. The extraordinary report that half of parents regularly allow their child a day off if the child says, I'm feeling upset. Lindsay Stanway is assistant head teacher at a school in Cumbria. She says children missing school for mental health days is a crisis.
So the kids that struggled through COVID, you're trying to pick up the improve their resilience, you're trying to improve the social skills, and if we don't do something quickly, it's going to become the new norm, and that's not going to be good for anybody.
Coming up, what would have happened if I'd said to it was mostly my mum, because my dad was at work, I don't want to go to school today because I feel upset. I'll share with you what my mother's reaction would have been. And I wanted to hear how it would have gone as well with your mum and or your dad. We'll take your calls on that. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is read by Dominic Ellis.
American military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine later as part of efforts to end the war with Russia. Unconfirmed reports suggest Washington and Moscow have held talks without Kyiv and are now proposing it makes major concessions. President Trump has carried out a major U-turn by approving the release of files connected to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Trump had long resisted calls to make them public, but has faced significant pressure from his own own supporters. And more schools in England are now eligible to apply for the Free Breakfast Club scheme. Primaries, in which more than 40% of pupils receive free school meals, will be able to sign up. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Some wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
The Labour MP says he'll stand aside so that Andy Burnham can take his seat and challenge Keir Starmer. The Tribune Group say they've got 80 MPs who are ready to depose Keir Starmer. Is there a crisis in the Labour leadership?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
And then up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming to 8:34, exactly what I wanted. Some messages, emails, texts coming in from Greater Manchester. Charlie Stone in Bury. Good old Bendy Burnham. He bends whichever way the wind politically blows. He said at an appointment he'd give up 10% of his salary to take souls off the streets. That's gone well. Try walking around the forest of sleepers. I imagine you refer to either Bury or Greater Manchester. Adam says, I would suggest Keir has a significant job to do rebuilding our international standing and reputation after all the damage done by the last lot. If he has a real skill set, it is that, as he seems to, he can make sense and he's leveraging it. Meanwhile, Adam, that's your Vijay, completely disagrees. The most important thing Labour Party can do now is to put a travel embargo on the Prime Minister. He's hardly here to do anything. He's off to South Africa. All right, let's get Mohammed. Ah, in South Shields. Right, again, the North. I know you're the different side of the country, but you are from the... Is Andy Burnham the man to unlock the great power of the North, Mohammed? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great show, as always. I believe so. I like him because he's strong. I believe what he says. I'm not a Labour fan, but I like him, to be honest. I think we would be so much better than Keir Starmer at the moment. Because, to be fair...
Where are the areas he's let you down? Would you say he's let the country down? What areas would you highlight first, Mohammed?
Well, I would say, to be fair, I honestly thought Labour would look after the pensioners when they came in. And the first thing they did was took the winter fuel...
Unbelievable.
...away from them. And to be honest, our great pensioners, much love and respect the pensioners, needed the money. These are your bread and butter people.
Mm.
You don't shaft the pensioners, Nick. No. Do you know what I'm saying? You really don't. These are the people that live on £60 and £70 a week.
Yep.
In South Shields, Newcastle and the North. These are the poorest pensioners, but yet they decide to take the winter fuel off them. I mean, where do you start with Labour? They're a disaster.
South Shields is obviously a traditional Labour supporting area. When you get among friends and with your clients, what are they saying about the performance of the government 17 months in?
Complete disaster. Everybody's looking forward to reform getting in, to be fair.
Even in South Shields?
Absolutely, it's a huge following for reform.
Do they like reform, or do they like Mr. Farage, the party leader, or do they like both? I should say that.
Absolutely, both. He's seen as a king up here.
And what is it, lastly, that they like about Farage or Reform UK's policies?
It's the politics. Sorting the boards out, looking after people, fairness, that sort of thing, you know.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Look after yourself, Mohammed. Sorting the boats out. I'm not being rude for 1 second. South Shields is a long way away from the Kent coast. I don't know how many hundreds of miles away, but it's quite a few. That shows how nationwide that problem is. They really haven't gripped that, have they? No government has. What was Rishi Sunak's laughable expression? Stop the boats. What was Sir Keir's equally ridiculous assertion? Smash the gangs. Utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. All right, we might return to that. But hopefully your child or your children are safely at school. School starts about now, or certainly walking through the gates or the gate. So what if they've woken up this morning and said, Dad, Mum, do you know what? I'm feeling a bit upset. Oh, well, you better not go in. I told you earlier, if I'd done that with my mum, my late mum or my late dad, well, Dad was probably at work, actually, almost every day, but my mum, who was a tremendous mother and very, very caring, but there was... I remember the family cat died. Do stay with me on this. But I remember I was in my early teens and the cat died, and she'd been around almost since I'd been born, and I was desperately upset. And Mum said, but I'm afraid that is life. You're going to have to go into school. If you get to school and you hate it, give me a call, I'm sure, and I will come and get you. But you've got to try. You can't just not go in because we've lost the cat. And I went in, and actually I had a good group of friends, and I think I had a little cry, and they put their arms around me, and on we go. Isn't that the way to do it? We're having this conversation because half of parents regularly allow their child a day off school if they feel too upset to go in, as in a family pet dying, by the way, if you think I went mad. An average of 6 days off school per year were taken for mental health reasons by 75% of families. Oh, gosh, there's such a slew of figures here. Let me just say that 90% claim their child's mental health is more important than attending school. I would suggest the two are interwoven, actually. We should say the research was done by BET, which organises education technology. Let's bring in a professional for expert views on this. Dr. Nahira Krauss is a consultant clinical psychologist and founder of the mental health charity STEM4, and that's the number 4 on the end, so that's STEM4. And the doctor joins me now. Don't want to be personal, but I'm going to start. If you said one day when you were at school age, you said to your mum or your dad, you know, I'm feeling a bit upset, I don't want to go to school. Doctor, what reaction would you have got? Good morning.
Good morning. I would have got the same reaction as your mum said to you, Nick, which would be that you need to go and try and learn how to manage the difficulties that you have in real-world settings. So this piece of kind of research is interesting because, of course, we want parents and carers to be aware of their child or young person's distress and be open to supporting them positively. The problem is how to support them positively. And we know that many young people are experiencing big swathes of anxiety. They have done post the pandemic.
Why? Did the pandemic bring?
I think the pandemic brought a lot of fear in a lot of young people, but also they became very comfortable at home because home for most people is a safe place. And so going back to school became a lot more worrying for some of those young people who might have had underlying issues. A feature of anxiety is avoidance. So one of the things that we don't want is taking time off to become a coping strategy, because that isn't a helpful one. What we have to do is to try and provide alternative tools to help manage it. So thinking about your story, you know, to be able to get that comfort from friends, to be able to say I'm feeling sad and for someone else to say I'm feeling sad too, is a hugely supportive and learning factor.
I don't know if you're a mum, but for parents listening now, how can they tell when a child is effectively trying it on, or they are experiencing genuine emotional distress? Because I'm sure, as a psychologist, you would not want to put a child through even more anxiety if they are in a genuinely bad place.
I think with any child, I think it's about trying to understand what that behaviour is all about. So I would explore what's happening at school, what's happening with their friends, why they feel that not going to school will help them, what it will help them with, and then try and help them to, you know, if it's about feeling overwhelmed and exhausted, how do they manage workload? If they're feeling terribly anxious, what are they fearful of? Do they need some help with social issues, for example? Do they need some help with managing sleep and eating? So it's very much about keeping that communication and connection going, finding out what's happening and providing them with some alternatives, ways of dealing with it. I think most parents want to comfort their child by saying, oh, you know, stay at home. It's wonderful. But sometimes that staying at home, or most times, isn't really helpful.
Lastly, 90%, including the research, claim their child's mental health was more important than attending school. Surely the two are, in a sense, interwoven, aren't they, Doctor?
They are absolutely interwoven, that actually your mental health is learned. You develop resilience by learning, by having all the relationships that you have, and by learning how to adjust to real-world settings.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Dr. Nahira Krauss, consultant clinical psychologist, founder of the mental health charity STEM4. That's the number four on the end. Baz said, I'm glad you mentioned your mother. If you were kept at home with my mother, you were definitely not well. Simon says, are we making excuses for the weak and young of today? This comes from, where's your name, sir? Steve. So we are Steve, who says, I came from a one-parent, Stephen Woodford, I came from a one-parent family. My dad was a postman, up at 4 a.m. So from 10, I was very independent. He sent me in no matter what day. It turned out one day I had appendicitis. Mental health is a real issue with young people post-COVID, but encouragement and support is needed to help them manage it better and working with the schools. Callum is furious with me. Down with caring about children's mental health. What's wrong with you, man? Callum, it's part of the coping strategy. If a child has genuine, as we've just said with the doctor, of course you don't send him or her in. But if they're just feeling a little bit upset, well, they're going to feel upset when in the workplace sometimes. And it's that you have to teach some sense of resilience. Chloe and Cheam, let's make you the first caller. Chloe, where were you? What do you do with your children or your child?
Oh, good morning, Nick. So she's a young adult now, but when she, just before she started year seven, so she was about 11,
yeah.
She suddenly developed anxiety. So it was quite extreme anxiety. She would vomit every morning without fail. At first, we didn't recognise the signs, and we thought, oh, perhaps it's a tummy bug, mm-hmm. You know, is she unwell? But we soon realised, actually, this is a regular pattern, and it was anxiety. She would beg me every day to not send her to school. She would be vomiting, and it was really, really difficult. She was under the care of CAMHS, which is the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service, mm-hmm. and she had a psychologist. And they said, look, it's really, really difficult, but you've got to try and send her in, because keeping her home is not going to help. And so that's what I did. I would want to keep her home. At the time, I was on maternity leave with my other child, and so it would have been really easy for me to keep her home. I was just home. I could look after her.
Yeah.
But I sent her to school. Sometimes she would continue to be sick at school for a little while. But over time, she learned to manage her symptoms. She recognised that it was in her mind, and she had to control what was going on in her mind as opposed to in her tummy. And really bizarrely, the anxiety would start in the morning, but it would stop every day at 12 noon. So she almost knew that all I need to do is get to midday and I will feel better.
Did you ever get to what was behind all of this with your daughter, Chloe?
It was change. And she still suffers with it now.
Right.
But so if there was any change, so obviously going into year seven was a huge change.
It
was going from primary
up
school to
school.
High school.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll never remember on the first day of high school, she'd spent the day before straightening her hair, making herself look all wonderful. And in the morning, she had her head down the toilet and was vomiting. And by the time she went into school late, she was a mess. And she didn't want to go, but so she it stopped at 12 o'clock, and even now as an adult, she works for the police now, and she often has to go in to her line manager and say, look, I know this is really odd, but until 12 o'clock I'm probably going to feel really unwell and may need to go and vomit. So she handles it now and manages it now.
What does she say to you? Sorry to talk over you, but I've got to get to the news in a minute. What does she say about the way you treated it when she was little and you were her mum?
So at the time, I was the worst mum in the world. She was really dreadfully unwell, and I was sending her to school. How cruel of me. But now, as an adult, she says, of course you did the right thing, mum, because if you just let me stay off school, I never would have gone to school. It would never have helped me address you know, the change and help me learn my development skills. So I think I did the right thing, and she thinks I did the right thing. But it was
lastly, I've taken you back to when your daughter was a child. Can I take you back to when you were a child, and if you'd said to your mum and or your dad, oh, I'm a bit upset, I'm feeling upset, I don't want to go into school, what would their reaction have been?
I would have gone to school. They would say, I'm really upset and I don't want to go to work, but here I am going to work.
I know the feeling. Chloe, look after her. And I hope the young woman does well with her career. And it's good that Lyman is around are understanding of her issues. Coming up after the news.
Don't tax our taxis. That's the warning from the private hire industry ahead of the budget. I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski with the story.
Yeah, delightfully sober after that victory now over Denmark. Alan Zizinski will file that report after the 8:47 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
US military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine as part of efforts to end the war with Russia. Speaking to LBC, a government minister has denied there's unrest within Labour after an MP offered to help a leadership challenge. And NHS doctors are set to use artificial intelligence to help find growth that could become bowel cancer. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many, wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M25 clockwise. There's a lane closed on the exit slip road at junction 3 for the M20 because a car has broken down. There are queues in Ickenham on the A40 going into town. There's a lane blocked on the exit slip road at the Swakeley's roundabout. That's because a lorry has broken down. There are queues on the North Circular westbound. It's partly blocked. There's an obstruction on the road between the M1 at Staples Corner and the Neasden interchange. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry. That's because of technical problems. On the Tube, there's no service on the Piccadilly line between Cockfosters and King's Cross St Pancras and severe delays, but in King's Cross and Acton Town, that's because of a points failure. There's also no service on the Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge, that's because of the poor rail conditions. And on the train, southeastern services aren't moving southbound from Charlton to Blackheath.
This is LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
The sage's best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Mmm, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S?
Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Sonny, for the call in just a moment. Dawn says, my son was upset when he was about six. He would get upset every morning and didn't want to go to school. I called the school, who told me he'd been setting himself each lunchtime. I don't know what you mean. I wonder if you mean perhaps wetting himself. I kept him from school a few times and got to the bottom of it. A dinner lady would shout at the children so much. Yes, so it is, but he would wet himself. Once I got to the bottom of it, adjustments were made and he was fine. His upset was justified. Dawn, it clearly was. Kieran Alderton says, there's a crossover on this topic with low-level autism and ADHD. My father told me when I was younger that my brother with autism, who he was with, and all people need to engage with society, including school, to learn how we can all cope with it. Sonia's in Southwark. Sonia, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning. So, just for context, I was a teacher for 20 years in secondary schools, assistant principal and a qualified SENCO. So
what subject did you teach?
I did a law degree, so I taught citizenship first.
Okay.
Then I switched to English, then I switched to history. Because I had good management, and actually later on I was diagnosed with ADHD and realised couldn't bear lots of noise. So that was my strategy. By keeping the kids really kind of engaged, I wouldn't have to deal with lots of noise.
So you were a teacher, and you have issues with noise. You did really well, Sonia.
Yeah, I did it for about 15 years, and then I resigned when my own daughter's autism diagnosis saw her transfer from primary to secondary.
Right.
And it was a horrid time. She became suicidal with the difficulties in that.
Oh, good Lord.
And so I resigned and got her settled, and then I set up my own non-profit. We're award-winning, and we support young people and families with neurodivergent needs and, you know, making sure schools and local authorities are giving them what they need. But, you know, I'm calling because I actually gave my daughter a mental health day yesterday. She didn't ask me for it. She had to have it because I see when she's burning out. So she had an unfortunate incident on the tube yesterday. She was pushed. The police have got involved. It's a common assault. We're looking for the lady.
Right.
I called the school.
How old is your daughter, did you say? Sorry, can you remind me?
14. She's in year 10.
Okay.
Yep. She's doing incredibly well.
Yep. Okay.
I called the school and I told them what happened because she was so upset and distressed when she called me. But she had a Jack Petchy Award day that she was working on, and she was so excited about that, so she wanted to go in. So then at the end of the day, she calls me again. I can't even understand her at this point because she's so incoherent from crying. And it turns out, and I'd asked the staff on the phone, please ensure that somebody goes in and checks on her throughout the day just to make sure she's okay, that she's processed what's happened. Because she won't go and find someone. That's how our children are. They kind of just think, oh, I don't want to be a pain. I don't want to cause problems. I don't want to be different. So she didn't do that. She didn't voluntarily go to a member of staff. Nobody checked in on her. And then at the end of the day, she was found by a member of staff, said, you've got a detention for being late today. She said, no, I haven't.
Right.
So-and-so happened. Oh, yes, well,
what was the upshot of that then? What has happened now on this
surname? So I had to get her an Uber home, her home. She was so distressed that if I don't teach my daughter to listen to her body and the signals, she will suffer severe autistic burnout. I don't know if you know this, but only 30% of autistic adults actually work because they burn out so much.
Right. Are you hopeful that your daughter will be able to go into the workplace?
She will be, because by the grace of God, she's my daughter, and we work incredibly hard to listen to her. She's a super intelligent young lady, but that means listening to their body. And Nick, you know, I was listening to this radio show some years ago, and you had a doctor on who spoke about the A&E differences now, where we've seen a 70% decrease in physical injuries in A&E for children, but an 80% increase in mental health needs. Yes, phones are a lot to do with this, but there's this as well, and we need to listen to young people.
Sonia, we do, and I need to listen to other people, so I have to say farewell. Best wishes to your daughter. Thank you. Rita's in Berkshire. Rita, you're in the school. You're a school teacher, is that right? What sort of school? Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Nick. I am a school teacher, and I'm also a trained SENCO, just like the previous caller. And I'm also a mother,
right.
And I have some experience. And I just think sometimes I feel personally, from my experience and also talking to parents as well, where this has happened, I think parents are getting very conflicting information. We've been told to listen to the children. We've been told to empathise with them, understand what they're going through. And that's good. It's good, but we're not given the tools on how to support them. So, for example, my child had anxiety, and, you know, I'm just like the other parent. I want to get to school. I want to get to work. I've got meetings to do. I've got things to do. I haven't got time to sit there and argue. And I think sometimes parents don't have the resilience either. And there are times when I was about to go to sleep at night thinking, I don't want to have that battle with her in the morning about school. Oh.
What would your advice be as a parent and a teacher? Yeah. What would your advice be, Rita?
I would say we have got to develop some resilience as parents. Okay. We have to make it very clear to the two children that this is what you need to do. You need to go to school, but like the doctor said earlier, the educational psychologist who came on a bit earlier, and she said we have to give them some tools. We need them to understand why they need to go to school, and then also work out what it is that is the issue and try and decipher the issue. And that's what I did with my child.
It's the coping strategy, isn't it? Rita, thank you for that. Thank you. Good luck with your family, who might take calls. But in a week's time, we're going to be talking about the aftermath of the budget. And there is a fear of a so-called taxi tax. And LBC is being warned communities could be cut off and fares go up. Rachel Reeves is reportedly considering the imposition of a flat 20% VAT on all private hire vehicle fares. An announcement which should come at the same time as the fuel duty freeze could be scrapped. LBC's Scotland correspondent Alan Zasinski filed this report.
When you're a small business trying your best to give a service to hospitality, to foreigners, to people in the local community, one more nail in the coffin, you could just be one too many.
I'm on the road with Cathy Cameron, the only private hire driver serving the rural town of Inverary, at least for now, because she says that her customers won't be able to afford her fees anymore if she has to raise them to cover the cost of these potential budget changes.
I think I would probably have to stop doing private hire because it just wouldn't pay me. You know, sometimes there is some help. You'll get help in the areas out here, Business Gateway, Islands and Islands Enterprise, that kind of thing. They're great. But what's the point in having them if the next thing the government comes along and says, oh, well, we're going to add this on and add that on and add the next thing on because you'll just make no profit. You say, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that for that money anymore. It's not worth it.
You're the only driver around here, so if you're not there, then these people, they're just not going to have any options.
Yeah, vulnerable might have to take someone if there's no ambulance. I might have to take them to A&E. I mean, we have quite a good bus service, but it's not frequent. So if someone misses the bus, or it's very early in the morning, or late at night, that's it. They can't get anywhere.
And the big city centre operators, Uber, Bolt and Vizu, where Andrew Westcott is a director, are warning us as well about the potential impact of this tax, which they claim we would feel immediately.
It would basically add 20% VAT to fares when there has never been VAT on those bookings. So, you know, it would potentially immediately, you know, overnight increase fares. Over 50% of private hire journeys are for essential services. So, you know, people getting to the hospital, you know, regular healthcare appointments. So it's not a one-off, which ultimately would drive down demand in the sector.
But of course the Chancellor needs to raise money, and there will be voices in the Treasury informing her that a taxi tax would be predicted to bring in £750 million a year. Steve Wright, though, of the Licensed Private Hire Car Association, has this message for them.
Keep the taxi and private hire VAT arrangement exactly the same as they already are, and go after people that are avoiding proper compliance with that. This is a fruitcake tax. It will be extremely unpopular and it will hit those who are the most vulnerable in society.
That was Steve Wright from the Licensed Private Hire Car Association concluding Alan Zasinski's report. We will come back to our conversation concerning childhood anxiety and whether it is right or not right to allow a child to take a day off school because they're upset, and plenty more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, American military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine as part of efforts to end the war with Russia. Unconfirmed reports suggest that Washington and Moscow have held talks without Kyiv and are now proposing it makes major concessions. It's claimed the plans would see Ukraine ceding territory and new limits would be placed on its army. Defence expert Karen von Hippel has told LBC that President Zelensky is likely to robustly push back on those suggestions.
We saw that Zelensky was in Turkey yesterday, and I think what he's trying to do is rally support so he won't have to concede so much from partners that have influence on the United States, including Donald Trump. And so I think there's a bit of a behind the scenes choreography going on right now. But of course, don't forget that the Ukrainian people have to approve of any peace deal. And that would give Zelensky some time to try to shore up more support.
President Trump says he signed a bill approving the release of files relating to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The US Justice Department now has 30 days to release them. A government minister has denied there's growing unrest within Labour after an MP offered to help a leadership challenge. The Norwich South MP, Clive Lewis, offered to step down to allow Greater Manchester's mayor to return to the Commons. There's ongoing speculation that Andy Burnham wants to take on Sir Keir Starmer, but he would need to be an MP to do so. The Children's Minister, Josh McAllister, has told Nick Sir Keir has overwhelming support still.
Clive has got his views. You know, the Labour Party's a broad church. It's not going to surprise anybody to know that Clive is critical of the party's leadership. What we're trying to do with the economy and getting the UK out of that doom loop, that is the central mission for the government.
Senior bosses at TikTok have told LBC that they're investing more in artificial intelligence to spot harmful content. MPs have raised concerns in recent weeks over the social media platform's plans to scrap 400 jobs in London as it moves towards automation. But the firm says within 4 months, AI has helped take down 86% of flagged videos automatically. More schools in England are now eligible to apply for the Free Breakfast Club scheme. Primaries in which more than 40% of pupils receive free school meals will be able to sign up. And NHS doctors are set to use AI to help find growth that could become bowel cancer. 5 new tools, which officials say could act as a second pair of eyes, have been approved for conditional use. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 65 at 95.57. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many, some wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Introducing the incredible new iPhone 17. It's designed to delight and built to last. Auto a lighting up Black Friday. Get iPhone 17 and save up to £360. Plus, find unforgettable shared experiences on priority. Search O2 Black Friday. O2, essential for living.
Ends 10th of the 12th. £360 saving is a £10 airtime device discount owed. That's 6 months on selected plans. Credit provided by Telefonica UK Limited. Eligibility and terms and conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine on Thursday, the 20th of November. The headlines just keep on coming for the BBC. Now a group representing hundreds of parents claiming that the trans bias they perceive within BBC news coverage has damaged their children. We'll look at that in more detail. Staying with our children, that report that says half of parents let children skip school, take a day off, they're, quote, feeling upset. Now, of course, there's genuine emotional anxiety and other issues, but I've been asking you if you'd said that to your mum and dad, what might your reaction have been? And to perhaps one of the weirdest stories of the week.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
How a court in Essex has dealt with the case of a naked, overweight male cyclist being punched to the ground by a motorcyclist who is also a bin man, who took offence at his naked cycling through Chelmsford. Oh, through Colchester, I'm sorry. The man was cycling as part of World Naked Bike Ride event. And I'll be asking you, have you ever ridden your bicycle naked as the day you were born?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Can any of us honestly say we've never ridden a bike? I know I can. My goodness. That's later in the show. Now to important matters, and here's the BBC on the front page again. It is the Telegraph, one has to say. My goodness, that newspaper has had the BBC in its sights and has done a fairly comprehensive job with that 8,000-word memo that's been recently exposed. But here's the headline. BBC trans bias has hurt our children. Hundreds of parents accusing the corporation of damaging their children with, and I quote, a constant drip feed of one-sided pro-trans programs. It's called the Bayswater Support Group. They represent 650 mothers and fathers of children and teens who believe they are trans. And they've called on Ofcom, the broadcasting regulator, to launch an investigation into coverage by the BBC. Among their complaints is that senior BBC managers, including Jonathan Munro, who, to the surprise of some, is now the head of news following the departure of Deborah Ternes, apparently Mr. Munro dismissed concerns and failed to take them seriously. Well, one of the shows in their sights is the CBeebies' Hey Doogie, is it? Or Dougie? I'm afraid I don't have five-year-olds, so I don't know. Dougie, thank you. Aimed at five-year-olds. After a raccoon called... After a raccoon called Wren and their siblings are introduced. Haven't got a clue. Here is the clip in question.
This is Arlo, and these are his siblings. This is Lucy, and her sibling. Here's Remy, and his siblings. And this is Wren, and their siblings.
To Claire Page, who's a parent of two children, Claire also heads up the campaign No Secret Lessons, a parent-led legal campaign for transparency in UK schools. May I call you Claire? Is that appropriate? Good morning.
Yes, yes. Hi, Nick.
Claire, thank you. You're calling for transparency. Transparency over what and from whom or which?
Well, the transparency I was looking for was so that parents could see lessons taught to their children when they ask for them, which I thought was pretty reasonable. And that's specifically with a concern for relationships and sex education, where there has been a lot of discussion of transgenderism in schools, which perhaps has the same sort of bias as you're talking about with the BBC.
How complex an issue do you believe trans and trans education to be, Claire?
It's complex in the sense that there is a great deal of funding, charity activity, activism, which is actually shaping a lot of public service, actually. So it's complex in its scale, actually.
OK. What is the BBC getting right? What is the BBC getting wrong, in your view?
Well, my experience is actually that they covered the case that I was involved in, the legal case, and they actually had a Radio 4 member of the team who actually was a trustee of the charity that was teaching RSE in my school. Unbeknownst to me, they invited that charity on and actually discussed my case when I wasn't there on a programme called The Antisocial. So that was with no right to reply, and I was described as a parent acting in bad faith by this charity.
What was that based on, Claire?
Well, it's hard to say because I don't know how you could ask in bad faith to see your kids earn lessons, really. Mm. But I think, you know, that they had taken a stance that they would like those lessons to be secret and not available under freedom of information, which is what I was asking for. So the BBC very much helped that charity to tell the story, a one-sided story, about its teaching, which involves promotion of transgender identity. So I then also was asked back onto BBC Radio 4 to Woman's Hour, where I might have a right of reply. But sort of shortly before that, I had a producer call me to say, do you know what, you're not to mention this charity, this charity that's taught in your school, and we'd like to just not discuss that part of things. And yet after I'd finished speaking, a statement was read out by that charity to discredit my views again, no right to reply. And I think this is one of the reasons we're seeing a bias, is that people with alternative views are not being invited to speak against or discuss their programming or discuss their particular, what we feel is a bias on this issue.
Now, the other group we're talking about, so you're not part of this, but the Bayswater Support Group representing 650 mothers and fathers of children and teens who think they are trans. They are sending a letter to Ofcom, and they talk about, on the behalf of the BBC, years of failure to regulate the grossly irresponsible and politically motivated coverage. Is that fair comment from them, Claire?
I believe it is, yes. I think it is indeed. And actually there are very, very real world consequences to this bias. I think.
What are those? Sorry to talk over you, Claire. But what are?
It's increasingly understood that there is, whatever the truth of a transgender identity is, it's very well understood that there is a social contagion element to this. Children are naturally impressionable. And so if you are presenting a particular message, perhaps in a very positive tone or an attractive, colourful and exciting way to children, they are liable to investigate and take on these ideas. And if you look doing that consistently from young years through cartoons and with no caution, it's potentially part of what is driving a social contagion in trans identity.
Claire Page, let's see what others make of your view. Very grateful to you. Thank you. You head up the campaign No Secret Lessons, and you are the parent of two teens. Listening, Roger Bolton, who was a boss at the BBC and a presenter of Feedback, now hosts the podcast Roger Bolton's Beewatch and has been an exceptionally busy man over the last couple of weeks with all those headlines. And I take you back to the Telegraph publication of that 8,000-word memo. Among many of the contents was the fact that reportedly the LGBTQ desk sometimes chooses not to do stories that it's tasked with. How did you react to that, if it's true? Good morning.
Brian, well, I'd first of all ask whether, before I'd react, ask if it's true.
I did say if it's true.
This is the problem. What we've got here is a polarised society which has very different views on very important issues. And the BBC's job is both to report the views of various people, but also try to establish where it can the facts. It's a human nature. You find what you look for, and you don't find what you don't look for. And so people who feel passionately about a subject naturally look for those things that support their view that there's, for example, bias. They probably find examples, but then the danger is they generalize and say, that must be a BBC policy. That must be intentional. The BBC must have this position. And that just is not the case. I mean, for example, at the weekend, I was chairing a discussion of the Carlisle Book Festival, very important book festival, Carlisle. Mm-hmm. I wish it was, but they try very hard. I'm desperate to help them. But anyway, it was
that
on.
That was the Carlisle Book Festival again, was it, Roger? Just to check, it was the Carlisle Book Festival.
Just to make sure, Carlisle and Cumbria.
Got it.
Cumbria, as I would say. But what we had there was a big attack by people who thought that the BBC was downplaying climate change. And an almost, I don't want to say evangelical atmosphere trying to do. The problem is, when you've got there's an old expression, when the country is divided, the BBC is on the rack. And if you have as polarized as we are, there's a real danger. And of course, to be absolutely fair, younger people come into the BBC and young journalists, what they often come in campaigning mode. And they often have to be told and educated into, sorry, you can't campaign here. And what we tend to see is when a new idea comes through, begins to be dominant, it takes a while for a reaction to come against it, then the reaction comes. But both sides say, the BBC, because it's trying to represent both sides, isn't therefore has a position, is biased. It isn't. And, once the law is established, and that's the role of Parliament, the BBC should make sure that it represents that position, but provides space for people who challenge the consensus. If it doesn't allow people to challenge the consensus, what is it?
Where is the BBC? What would your message to the BBC bosses at this time be, lastly, Roger?
Constant vigilance. Make sure you don't make mistakes. And if you make mistakes, don't make the same ones again. And make sure that you explain to the public what you're trying to do instead of this almost ridiculous silence. The reason it got into real trouble last week was for a week it didn't say anything, and that is critics. And silence breeds assent, and people would say, well, they haven't replied, therefore they must be guilty. No, they were just incompetent.
Catch Roger Bolton at the next Carlisle Book Festival. Don't let's forget it. Roger, thank you. You were a BBC boss and presenter. You now have Roger Bolton's Beeb Watch calls coming in already. There's a very, very charged and emotional aspect. What should the BBC's coverage be? We'll return to that. 9:15, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
US military officials are reportedly in Ukraine to discuss a new peace deal to end the war with Russia. A government minister has told LBC that Keir Starmer has Labour's full support, despite an MP offering to help with a leadership challenge. And NHS doctors are set to use AI to help find growth that could become bowel cancer. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many, wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. It's partly blocked because a car has broken down between Junction 26 for Waltham Abbey and Junction 25 for Enfield. On the North Circuit westbound, there are queues because there's an obstruction on the road between the M1 at Stables Corner and the Neasden Interchange, so one lane is closed. There are queues in Eltham on the South Circuit westbound after an accident earlier between the Clifton's roundabout and Baring Road, so all the lanes are open there. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry because of technical problems. On the Tube, there's no service on the Piccadilly line between Fosters and King's Cross St Pancras, and severe delays between King's Cross St Pancras and Acton Town. That's because there's a points failure at Arnus Grove, and there are minor delays on the Central, Northern and Bakerloo lines.
This is LBC.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Oh, yeah.
Keep the extra guests entertained this winter with EETV.
So I can watch all me crime dramas.
While the rest of us have the football on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix Now, TNT Sports, and Discovery Plus. All powered by EE's ultra-fast full fiber. Sign me up. Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream...
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get straight into the conversation about this perceived bias within the BBC. Yet another set of headlines to rock the corporation. Sal's in Paddington. You're on the radio. Sal, what do you
say?
Good
morning, Nick.
Hello.
We've been here before.
What do you mean by that,
We've been here before.
Do you mean you and I?
As in, the BBC has been in the firing line and accused of promoting this, that and the other all the time. For a start, how do you constantly drip-feed something because they're two mutually exclusive terms? And also...
But a drip feed is constant, isn't it? If you think of a tap, that is constant drip, 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 isn't it? No, have I got that?
If it was the only point of view that was being put forward, or if there were no non-trans people anywhere on their programming, then perhaps it would be constant. But this is exactly the same arguments that were being had from 1987 onwards when the BBC had the temerity of screening a gay kiss on EastEnders. And it was in 1994...
Was that Michael Cashman?
Yes. And in 1994, when Biker Grove had a gay kiss in it as well, and such uproar, we've had Section 28. We know what happens when people start saying, oh, you shouldn't be teaching... or promoting this, that and the other, when there is a difference between promotion and acknowledging that something exists.
Why do you imagine the trans issue is so charged?
Because it is one of the last issues of actually acknowledging and accepting people who they are that we have left. And what has upset me the most is the fact that when I was campaigning for the equalisation of the age of consent, when I was outside the House of Lords for their votes. It was
sorry, just explain.
This activists were standing with me.
This is equalisation for gay people, is it, just to clarify? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And
yes,
it was trans people who were our allies, and to now have the same people who would decline the equalisation of legal protection for gay people, basically pulling out exactly the same arguments. And this is the point. They're exactly the same arguments. It's not different at all. It's
remind me, you were obviously closer to it than I was. So the allegation then was that the BBC was totally one-sided in its coverage of that issue. Is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely, yes.
I see.
When actually all that was happening was they were talking about it.
And yet we do learn from that 8,000-word memo from the whistleblower that on occasions the LGBTQ desk within the BBC would say, well, we're not going to cover that story. That can't be right because it doesn't represent our sort of views, our group think. That can't be right, can it?
That is also not right. I'm not saying that I don't believe that there should be, partisanship, but acknowledging that something exists is not the same thing as promoting it. And the parents who are saying, well, the BBC is, convincing or brainwashing our kids, this is the same argument that parents of gay children were pushing forward, saying that it was because it was hip and trendy and that their children were being, were having their minds twisted.
Lastly, you're far closer to this, and I'm very grateful for your input. So sort of standing independently away from this, as in you're not a former BBC producer and you're not part of a campaign group, this sort, do you think the BBC get it about right, the coverage that you might occasionally see on this issue? Do you think it's slewed one side or the other? Sal?
I don't think it's slewed at all. I think, we have had some trans and openly trans characters in a few things. This is hardly, this is very much more like the I think it was a conservative reform person saying that she was upset with the fact that there were ethnically diverse people on her television. There are very few trans people. They are still very much persecuted and, attacked just for being who they are.
Sal, thank you. And for all the background from years ago with your campaigning. Joe in Wandsworth, I would agree the transgender has been considerably pushed by the BBC. One programme I watched was very distressing. It featured a mother who transitioned and her two young children who seemed very frightened, upset and confused, being told they now had to call their mother their father, and the actual father had left the home on top of all of that. One little boy at the younger child's school said, "Your mum has gone," which upset the child and was chastised for saying so. Joshua Wickham Young, with a point Sal was just making. This is exactly what people said in the 80s about gay people. It's no difference. I see a bias against LGBT plus people. Practically every news outlet attacks the community tenfold. Andy says, no one is born racist. Same with trans, the human condition. Let them be children. Let them make up their own minds as and when they feel ready to. It's not, if you're involved in running the BBC, it's not quite as straightforward as that, because there will be times when you have to cover stories. And that is when you will discover whether there is an actual or perhaps an unintentional bias. Let's turn to other matters. And in the previous hour, we talked about this report from an organisation that handles educational technology. They're called BETT, if it's important to you, B-E-T-T. And they spoke to a large number of parents about emotional absence days. And they discovered half of parents regularly allow their child a day off school if the child says he/she is feeling too upset to go in. Sam in Clackett Lane was listening to this. You're on the radio, Sam. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Well, of course, it just could be a regular pattern that they think is their child needs that. It's actually, therefore, probably a projection of what the parent thinks they need. They need a day off from this, a day off from that. And they want a bit of company sometimes. You see, I love...
How do you know this? Are you in education?
Yeah, I'm a psychotherapist. I've been working in the NHS. I'm working in schools in London.
You work with young people, do you?
Yeah, and I work with young people now because now...
How many years have you been doing this?
Oh, crikey. I was qualified as a psychotherapist in 2010.
Right.
But I had been counselling for many years before that. And I left the NHS about 3 years ago. I do private work, and the mums bring their children to me because they know that we can work it out. So if you have a situation like a habitual situation where, for example, I've seen children who haven't been to school regularly for 3 years, because every time mum tries to take it to the school, the child screams and cries and can't go in, and the teachers are distraught, don't know what to do with it. So they keep it in for a couple of hours and send it home. And then I come in and I say, okay, let's see. I have a word with the child first, and I say, you're being bullied. Is there any teachers upsetting you? And the child goes through everything. No, no. So what do you do when you're at home then? You know, you're at home. They say, well, I just, you know, sit with mum, or I play my PlayStation or something like that. And I say, do you love your mum? Yes, I do love mum. Okay. Is she okay? Is she actually well? Oh, yes, she's well, but there's something happens. She suddenly will kind of have to lie down on the floor, and she'll be sort of shaking and upset.
Oh, Lord.
And I said, okay, well, let's think about that, what that could be. Do you think that might be a panic attack?
Right.
And then you get the answer, yes. And I said, well, you're a brave little soldier then, aren't you? Because what do you imagine will happen with a panic attack? What do you think will happen? What could happen to mum? I said, well, do you think she may die? And they look at me, and you definitely get the yes. So then I have to educate mum that what's happening, don't blame yourself, you didn't intend this to happen, but your child is trying to save you. That's why they're at home. The biggest factor for children consistently being at home is they're worried about the family situation, but in particular the mum. They've associated mum with their survival, and they think they won't survive without their mum. Therefore, any mum, for example, who's spending 3 hours, and I've known of mums that do, 3 hours on the phone every day talking to their family all about their problems and their friends, and they're always saying, well, this happens to me, that, oh, it's terrible, and the child's mind is getting filled with all these fears about the survival of the parent.
How common an occurrence, of every 10 children that you sit down and work with, how many of this similar situation where I don't go to school because mum sometimes needs to lie down or whatever, how common is it?
I think it's a codependency. Sometimes it's actually the parent wants the child there. But it's so common, I would say. Well, the trouble is, it's never mentioned. For example, the doctor you had on in the last hour, you know, she knew her stuff, but she said, now you need to find out what's going on with the child's friends and what's going on at school. She didn't say what's going on with mum and dad. Mm. And that is where we fail. We can't say anything. Everyone's being very careful, tight-lipped. You mustn't say the wrong thing, because if you're working in an NHS setting and you suggest to mum, I wonder if this might be going on based on what you've told me, and then she could become very defensive. She might want to make a complaint about you. And then the NHS don't want complaints. That they're actually actively working every day to stop complaints. So it seems a bad thing. So don't upset anyone is the message, but I think you have to get in there forensically. I'm a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, and I can solve the problem. But the country isn't brave enough to do that yet, because we don't want to hurt mums. We love them. Of course, they're fabulous mums. There's wonderful mums. And they can all be wonderful mums if they're given the tools.
How is this codependency to be broken in some instances?
Okay, well, it starts in the, you know, by the time the child's 7 months old. The child's already learnt, in some cases, if it cries, that a loving mum will come with a big smile on her face and attend and soothe the child and help it to regulate. Some babies learn very quickly that their crying is a cause of real anger on the parent, who looks at them and frowns at them. So the baby learns that my problems are too big for my parent, and it starts to try and change its behaviours and becomes more withdrawn. And these kind of relationships, starting this young, they just need trained people. There's not enough fully qualified people in this area who understand the psychological links between mum and baby and child.
Lastly, to parents listening now, Sam, how do they know when a child says, I'm feeling upset? How can they tell the difference? Because they just fancy a day at home, or they are genuinely suffering some form of anxiety or distress.
I think sometimes children do fancy a day at home, but even if they don't tell the parents what's wrong, you will find out maybe the parents have been having rows, the dad's facing unemployment, a little bit of domestic violence or something like that, and the child is now sitting in the class, and his mind isn't on the class, it's on his home life. And what it's worried about is what's happening at home at the moment. What are they doing?
I'm going to have to leave you. That's what I'm doing, Sam. Thanks for all the input. I'm already getting late to the news, so I've got to get my shift on. We will continue this conversation. We've also got more calls coming in on the BBC's reported bias handling of trans issues. And as a Essex court has to deal with violence following a naked cycler celebrating World Naked Bike Ride Day, I'll be asking you, have you ever ridden your bicycle naked? 9.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News then, Dominic Ellis.
American military officials are due to hold talks in Ukraine later as part of efforts to end the war with Russia. Unconfirmed reports suggest the US and Russia have held talks without Kyiv and are proposing it makes major concessions. President Trump says he signed into law the bill to release more files on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Trump had long resisted calls to make them public, but has faced significant pressure from his supporters. And the Children's Minister Josh McAllister has denied there's growing unrest within Labour after an MP offered to help a leadership challenge. The Norwich South MP, Clive Lewis, has offered Andy Burnham his seat so he can return to the Commons and take on Sir Keir Starmer. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Deliberately blending two themes regarding our children, one of which is these emotional days or upset days that they don't go in. The other is a supposed or perceived bias as regards children, a lot of children's programming on trans issues. It's the latter of those two that Joe in Wandsworth wants to talk about. Joe, what do you say about what you see as some of the BBC coverage? How exercised does it make you? Good morning.
Good morning. I did happen to see one programme. I mean, I'm not saying it needs to be banned and never talked about, but as everybody that says it is a thing and it needs to be discussed, they also acknowledge that the trans community is very, very small.
Yep.
So I don't see why this much coverage would be appropriate for it. But the programme that I watched, I found it very distressing, actually. And I just thought, you know, I felt very sorry for the children that were involved, that they were being told that their mother was no more. But that person was now their father.
Oh, this is a show, yes.
Their own father had actually left the home because of the consequences.
Ah, someone else talked about this. Now, was this a documentary, a movie?
No, it was a CBeebies programme.
So it's a drama?
No, it was just it was a real life.
Oh, it's real life?
Yes. Oh, it was gracious. A real life show about this mother who had... in her words, she'd come out and realised she was a man. So that her husband and her had finished and he'd left the home and she was now telling her kids, who were very young.
Goodness
and
me.
Looked very scared. It was very distressing to watch, actually.
So did you say this was CBeebies made this show?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was CBeebies. It was some kind of a BBC.
You don't happen to remember... I'm trying to find the email that came in on this. You don't remember the name of the show, do you, by any chance?
I don't remember the actual name of the show, but it was basically all about how this mother came out as a man, and she was now telling her children, I am now your father. And another child, at the younger child, her younger child's school, had said, your mama's gone.
And your mama's gone?
Well, because...
No, I mean, I get the theme, but that...
The mum was telling her the mum had gone, and she was now their father.
And the person I'm going to call the father, i.e. the biological father, he left home, did he?
He'd already left the home. For what reason, I don't know, whether he'd been asked to or he just thought, right, well, this isn't going to work with me. I don't know.
Now, how would you describe the tone of the show? Was it just basic reporting, i.e. very independent? Was there a sort of tone of support? Was there a tone of distress?
Very much a tone of support.
Was there?
Very much a tone, yes.
Mm.
Very much a tone of support. And these two little kids, I mean, the older little girl was trying to sort of keep it together, but the younger little boy was just... He seemed very distressed.
Would he? I mean, am I allowed to say he'd lost his dad? I mean, I think he has. Isn't he? He's lost his biological dad. I can say that.
Well, he's also lost his mum as well, because he was being told. It was just
wow.
I mean, I couldn't get my head around it as an adult, and these were like really quite little kids, you know.
I don't know that that's a BBC programme for children. Yeah, well, I was just going to say, do you make a programme for that for adults, 9 o'clock at night? Yes, I can see that, but that on CBeeB content, I would suggest, is not the right location for it.
Well, they did, and if I can find it, I'll forward it to you, and you can decide for yourself.
Please do. Lastly, that your upset was caused by looking at the children, who, of course, are obviously very confused and probably actually quite distressed in all of this.
But nobody seemed to be picking up on that. It was just that, you know, this person had decided...
Oh, here we go.
They were now a man and they were the father.
Can we get a date on that? When Mum Becomes Dad, is that what it was called?
It might have been.
Yeah, When Mum Becomes Dad, 12-year-old Tilly... This is from November 2020, so this is 5 years ago. 12-year-old Tilly is learning to live with two dads, as 5 years ago her mother came out as a trans man. We follow Tilly. She shows us what her life is like
now. This is a different show, but there's more than one show that's been made like this. There were quite a lot of different shows.
How interesting.
And it focused on real life. It wasn't
this is real
a drama
life.
That was made up. This was a real-life family. Yeah.
So what on earth? I'm not saying, by the way, this isn't a TV show. It clearly is a TV show because it's lived in your memory for however many years. But is it a CBeebies TV show? Joe, thank you for your input. Irina. Is it Irina or Irina? Irina in Croydon.
Irina.
Hello, Irina in Croydon. Well, that's a show. I don't know if it's the right one for children. What do you make of this conversation? Good morning.
Good morning. It's just that I think it's wrong on the BBC site. Because it's not the first time. I think 3 weeks ago, my child came to me and he was like, oh, Mama, there's a homosexual character in Hey Daddy.
Sorry, your child said there's a homosexual character in Hey Daddy?
Hey Daddy.
Hey Daddy. I'm so sorry, the programme we were talking about. I'm so right, yep, Hey Daddy, got it. Yep. Sorry, I was confused with the other caller.
There's also Vita the Vet, they got two dads. I just think that it's kind of like brainwashing.
How old was your child who came to you about Hey Dougie?
He's 11.
He's 11. Okay, right.
Yeah.
And what did he say about that? What did he say? I think it's good. I think it's bad. I don't understand. What does it mean? What was his general sense, would you say, Irina?
He was a bit puzzled. He was like, why are they putting so many homosexual characters in overall cartoons, because there's that, there's Vita the Vet, she got two dads as well.
Right.
And I think it's increasing the amount of LGBTQ agenda that is coming throughout cartoons. But I think they're too small.
How nervous does that make you if your child or your children are watching some of this output and they report back like that?
I think it's good that they report to me, because now I know exactly what like to do for them, but also is a bit concerning, because they're being presented with so much of this throughout, not just BBC but other media outlets.
Best wishes to your family, Irina. Thank you. Blythe says, I'm a lesbian. I'm very conscious of BBC bias in favour of trans ideology on their news pages and their children's programming. Replacing words like brothers and sisters with siblings and the words mothers and fathers with parents is a deliberate ideological choice in their style guide. Those changes in kids' programmes are just like the NHS referring to mothers as pregnant people. It erases language that pinpoints our sexist. Sexes. That's what the ideology wants to do. We might return to that, but let's go back to child anxiety. Elizabeth says, I run a recruitment agency. I had a candidate accept a job, but anxiety stopped him from turning up for his first day, and he lost an amazing opportunity to make a career with a really good business. He's a young man, 20, but he could not do it. Anxiety is having such a negative effect. Meanwhile, I'll read this from Anthony. I don't know if I support it. My partner and I have just had to pin down our 7-year-old and forcibly dress him as he screamed. He's going into school no matter what. I don't know if that... Would you go as far as that? Ross in Halifax. Ross, you're a teacher. What's schools? Primary, secondary? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. I was a secondary teacher. I've taught in London for 25 years. I now work in schools all across the country. Primary, secondary, alternative provision, further education.
And what do you say to this report? Did you notice it? I was going to say in the classrooms. We're not in the classrooms when the children didn't turn up.
Well, I think my view is that, you know, I'm in my 50s. I grew up in a period of time when, you know, my mum and dad would say, you know, get to school regardless. Mm. There's a period of time when anxiety or mental health wasn't a conversation. Mm. I think we're much more literate with mental health. There's lots more that we need to understand as a society. There's lots of hidden illnesses. There's lots of things parents, teachers, we still don't understand. I find in my day-to-day work now looking at MRI studies to understand different neurological conditions in the brain, to understand some of these issues that we still are trying to understand collectively to help our young people. One key point would be that, you know, mobile phones, we didn't grow up in a time when we could see violence, beheadings, knife crime on a digital device that our young people can today, whether they're looking at mobile phones under parental guidance or unsolicited.
So you're a professional in this field. Are we just getting better at diagnosing it? Because as you rightly say, I'm older than you,
but it didn't
exist in my time. Ross?
Well, it did exist.
Well, I want to rephrase that. We didn't experience it in my time, that's what I wanted to say.
I think we did experience it. We probably didn't have the literacy to describe it or to identify it. And, you know, MRI scans, I wouldn't know the exact date, but they've only been around 50 years. Mm. We've learnt more about the brain in the last 50 years than we have in the last 4,000 years. So there's much more to discover about hidden illnesses, conditions, you know, students experiencing things that we might not have been able to describe when we were children ourselves, or our parents being able to understand what some of these things that were happening to our young people that we see today.
When you were teaching, how much of this was a conversation in the common room among other teachers?
Oh, it was every day, every day.
And what was the general feeling within the common room?
I think it's a matter of learning needs. You know, safeguarding is the highest priority for all teachers and school leaders across the country. It's your number one conversation, you know, outside and inside the classroom, beyond your teaching curriculum. It's a daily conversation. There's always needs, as we know, social care and funding in schools has been stretched. As resources become more and more thin.
And away from the school.
You have to prioritize your resources.
Do you think, as we heard from Sam, who works in this field, sometimes it's because of pressures, problems sometimes in the home as well, between mum and or dad?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one thing we don't really talk about is parental support, parental guidance. You know, I'm a father. It was my choice. Mm. I haven't had any training. I've had to learn on my own. Luckily, I've got my own social circles, my own things that I've experienced in my life where I can pass on things that I've learnt to my son, but other parents might not have that social network or those experiences. So there's lots of things we could do maybe more to provide extra support to our parents, but we're talking about, you know, I don't know the exact number. I think it was 20 million families last time I checked.
Wow. Ross, thanks again. Really important perspective from a teacher. Thanks for your input on that. Coming up after the news, it's mighty cold out there today, isn't it? It's below zero in some ways. I don't know what you've got in store today, but do you fancy...
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike.
And
if you do, do you fancy doing it stark naked? The story of the day for me, the Essex court that had to deal with the naked overweight cyclist who was punched to the ground by a motorcyclist. He, the cyclist, was celebrating World Naked Bike Ride Day. I'm asking you, have you ever ridden a bicycle naked? Can any of us honestly say we haven't? It's 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Senior US officials are in Ukraine to discuss a potential new peace deal to end the war with Russia. President Trump has carried out a major U-turn by approving the release of files connected to Jeffrey Epstein. And a government minister has told LBC that Keir Starmer has Labour's full support despite an MP offering to help a leadership challenge. LBC weather, another cold but dry day, wintry showers for the north of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Gough. There are long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. One lane is closed because a car has broken down, but in Junction 26 for Waltham Abbey and Junction 25 for Enfield. It's slow on the M4 westbound. The exit slip road at Junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead is blocked. A car has broken down. On the North Circular westbound, there are queues because there's an obstruction on the road between the M1 at Staples Corner and the Neasden Interchange, so one lane is closed. It's slow in West Hampstead. Fortune Green Road southbound is closed from Finchley Road to Weech Road. That's because a water main has burst. There's no service on the Ferry because of ongoing technical problems. And on the tube, there's no service on the Piccadilly line between Rainers Lane and Uxbridge. That's because of the port rail conditions. There are also minor delays on the rest of the Piccadilly line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Another vulture circling Sir Keir Starmer, but does this one have any claws? And Mystery Hour from 12.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
All right, tank's full. And I use my Nectar points to get money off fuel.
No way, how much?
600 points, 10 pence off per litre at Esso, and I get 100 points back.
Carpooling and fuel savings. Nice one.
Yep. Now, if we could just near leaving on time.
Let's not push it.
Turn your Nectar points into savings at Esso. Spend 600 points, get 10 pence off per litre and 100 points back.
18 plus, Nectar required. Participating Esso excludes NI. Until the 3rd of December. T's and C's at nectar.com/Esso.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service is really good.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, complete change of tack, and we do try and make your days brighter, so I'm going to take you to, well, events in Essex that were heard at Ipswich Crown Court up in Suffolk, as footage emerged of an incident where a biker punched a naked cyclist as he took part in a charity ride, quite an overweight naked cyclist. The video shows the victim pedalling along a residential street in Colchester, Essex, when a gentleman called Lee Turnage rides up alongside him on his motorbike. This happened in August. The cyclist was taking part in a World Naked Bike Ride Day, which explains why I, on that day, saw a man. I now know why I saw a man cycling naked down Teddington High Street. This is the penny has dropped. Now, I didn't then decide to go give chase and punch him to the ground, but Turnage did, causing the man to fall to the pavement. He was sentenced to... He, the man who did the punching, by the way, was sentenced to 14 months in prison, suspended for 2 years. In mitigation, his counsel said that he'd encountered a number of middle-aged men cycling in the nude, and he reacted very badly. He thought of it, to use the vernacular, as perverts cycling naked in what was a residential area, where obviously children were around. He works part-time as a binman for Colchester Council. He has to carry out 15 rehabilitation days, 75 hours of unpaid work, pay £2,000 in compensation to the cyclist. He's also had his licence revoked and paid a £200 fine. Now, the victim, it has to said, said the injuries sustained have impacted me greatly. I'm more reliant on a stick, putting more weight through it because of the pain. My leg remains swollen to this day. August, September, October, November, that's what, 3 months long. But I had to ask, don't want to get into the legalities of all of this, have you ever cycled naked? And if so, why? It's like when you read about or you see videos of people who go to naturist clubs or naked, and the first thing they want to do is play volleyball or table tennis. Why is it? I've got my clothes off. I'm going to play volleyball. Why just sit and read a book? All right, here we go. Lloyd in Hackney. Have you ever cycled naked as the day you were born?
Yes, pretty much every year.
On this special day?
Yes.
Why was this day created?
I'm not sure why it was created. It started a lot longer before I started cycling naked.
Yes.
I happened to see it once in London, and my mate was on it, and I saw him, waved it down. That's how I found out about it.
Right.
So the reason I do, I mean, one, I'm a naturist anyway.
You're a naturist, are you? Okay. Yeah, is that what you do for your holiday? Excuse me, your holidays, you always go naturist resorts?
No, actually. not on holidays. I've only been on one nature's holiday.
Right.
I just do it sort of if I go to a beach,
yeah,
or go to a nature's club.
And what's the appeal?
It's just feels natural.
Mm.
It's there is nothing more natural than being naked. You're born naked.
You are. Yeah.
It's just the society has built up this whole, oh God, it's disgusting, it's disgusting. Kids don't think it's disgusting, they run around naked.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as soon as like society's put these pressures on you or these morals on you and
how easy is it to tell your friends who are not naturists that you are one? How do they often react?
They all laugh, they all know.
And
they all think it's hysterical.
And what of your girlfriends or boyfriends or wives or whatever you've had down the years, do they join you?
The one partner I did have, joined me.
Yeah, yeah, and not a problem for them?
No, that in fact, we started together, that's how we got into it.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. Now, here's the question. It must be a bit uncomfortable with the saddle to ride naked, Lloyd.
Everyone says that.
Well,
it's
of course
really
they
not.
Do, because I'm never going to try it, am I?
Well, exactly. It really isn't. In fact, I find it more comfortable.
Oh, come on. Now, don't tell me untruths.
I personally find it more comfortable than cycling with my cycling shorts, because the cycling shorts hold everything in place right on the saddle, so I'm cycling on myself.
Yes.
Where when I'm not, it's off to the side. So
it finds a natural equilibrium.
Yeah. So personally, I find it much more comfortable.
All right. OK, I'll take your word for it. Thank you. That's the blokes. Jennifer in Kensington. Hello.
Hello, Nick. Lovely to talk to you again.
Are you a naked cyclist?
I'm not a naked cyclist, but I went on the first ever naked bike ride, which was well organised, and I actually found out about it in Time Out. And
oh, gosh, I remember Time Out. Yeah, yeah, go on. That was huge at one point. Huge magazine.
Going back years and years.
I'm afraid, yeah, it is, yeah.
It was a beautiful, warm day, and I think it was in June. And we had to meet at 11 a.m. in Hyde Park. When I got to Hyde Park, half the people were already naked, the other half were taking their clothes off. I actually kept my knickers on.
So
a bit more comfortable on the saddle.
Right. But you knew some women who did go stark naked on the to cycle.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of women that were naked. There was a few that kept their knickers on because of the comfort on the saddle.
All right. What is the appeal?
Well, the reason they went on this first ever naked bike ride was to do with pollution.
Oh.
I can't remember the details, but I remember it had something to do with pollution. And so, we actually had a police escort on bicycles, obviously fully clothed.
Right.
All the way round the route, which went from Hyde Park, Piccadilly Circus, all the way up Shaftesbury Avenue and around all everywhere. I mean, it lasted for about 3 hours, a bike ride.
I was going to ask, do you have any idea, and I know this is always very difficult to judge the size of a crowd, but have you got any sense of how many people were doing it?
There was a lot of people doing it, and there was a lot of people that were lining the route and cheering us on.
Right.
And taking photographs.
Right, okay.
And it was all the internet.
Yeah, I don't want to get too gamey here. How uncomfortable was it, though? Did you feel embarrassed in any sense or not at all?
No, not embarrassed at all, because I kept my knickers on, because I'd always sunbathed topless in Hyde Park, Kensington Gardens, during the summer, and on the beaches, so it didn't bother me that the top half of me was naked.
Jennifer, safe cycling as and when you decide to get back on two wheels. Thank you. Ash is on the Wirral. You cycled naked, have you, Ash? Who knew so many people did? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Partial to it when, after a few drinks back in the old commando days.
Hang on, now, when you say commando, you don't mean as in... Do you mean military commando or going commando?
Probably both, to be fair.
Oh, you served as commando, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. Right, okay. Right, I better admit myself with you then. So, presumably, you're on camp and you have a couple of lagers and it's all a bit of a hoot and all the lads do it. Is that roughly what we're talking about?
To be fair, on the occasion I have done it, it's just been me with a green lid on after a good night out.
How uncomfortable is it in the saddle area, Ash?
I think once you sober up and you realise there is no suspension, that's when it comes and kicks you.
Will you do it again?
Oh, 100%. It's liberating.
Thanks for your service as a commando. Thanks for your call. I'm finishing. Great idea. And just with his military helmet on. The only one. Just with his helmet on. Malcolm in York. Malcolm, how often do you cycle naked as the day you were born?
Every World Naked Bike Ride Day.
What's the drive behind World Naked Bike Ride Day? What are you campaigning for?
It's a protest. If you can see me naked, why don't you see when I've got my clothes on? So many motorists kind of
come
at me with cyclists.
So it's nothing to do with pollution. This one isn't to do with pollution like Jennifer's was.
The rise in York certainly has two focuses. One is pollution, and one is reduce the amount of, shipping going long distances.
Yeah.
But the other is, see me naked, see me with my clothes on.
I get it.
Be aware of cyclists when you're driving.
I get it. Quite.
And that is a very big thing.
Yeah, that's very clever.
It's also part of all the rest of it, but...
All right, level of discomfort.
It's a protest about being seen.
How uncomfortable is it, lastly?
Not in the slightest, but uncomfortable.
All right, I'll leave that to you, because I'm never going to find out. You had the last word of the day. I'm grateful. Thank you. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. We've covered everything from naked cycling to a new Prime Minister. You'll stay up to date there with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news, or is that the nudes? Here on LBC, I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it doesn't exactly fill one with optimism, does it? A Russian envoy and a close colleague of Donald Trump have assembled a so-called cash for land deal to end the war in Ukraine. It prompts an awful lot of questions, this, not least the question of why and how an issue, a conflict that once dominated the news agenda in this country, has slipped into the background. I don't know if that's true in the rest of continental Europe. I suspect the nearer to Ukraine you are, the more urgent this situation has become. But what would it mean if Zelensky was compelled to accept these terms for Ukraine, but also, of course, for Europe.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, senior US military officials are due to meet with President Zelensky in Ukraine to explore restarting peace talks with Russia. Unconfirmed reports suggest Washington and Moscow have held secret talks without Kyiv and are proposing it makes concessions. His claim plans include ceding territory and limiting the size of Ukraine's army. The European Union's foreign policy chief is Kaya Kallas.
What we as Europeans have always supported is a long-lasting and just peace, and we welcome any efforts to achieve that. Of course, for any plan to work, it needs Ukrainians and Europeans on board.
President Trump has carried out a U-turn by approving the release of files connected to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Trump had long resisted calls to make them public, but has faced pressure from his own supporters. Greater Manchester's mayor has refused to rule out a bid to challenge for the Labour leadership. Andy Burnham says he's fully focused on the mayoralty but appreciates the support of the MP Clive Lewis. Yesterday he indicated that he would potentially give up his parliamentary seat to Mr. Burnham. Children's Minister Josh McAllister's told LBC that Sir Keir Starmer won't be distracted from the job at hand.
The Labour Party's a broad church. It's not going to surprise anybody to know that Clive is critical of the party's leadership. What we're trying to do with the economy and getting the UK out of that doom loop, that is the central mission for the government, so we can improve people's cost of living.
Senior bosses at TikTok have told LBC that they're investing more in artificial intelligence to spot harmful content. MPs have raised concerns recently over its plans to scrap 400 jobs in London as it moves towards automation. But the firm says within 4 months, AI has helped take down 86% of flagged videos automatically. Ali Law is from the social media platform and says it's a major aid in efforts to protect young people.
AI models can actually detect something like a weapon, a knife in a cooking video, for example, versus a knife used in a street attack. AI has the level of sophistication, the level of intelligence to be able to make a recommendation on the basis of what else is in the video.
And more than 150 schools are closed in northern Scotland, parts of Wales and North Yorkshire due to snow and ice, and amber warnings also in force in the North Yorkshire moors. Forecasters are warning that up to 4 inches of snow could fall on higher ground. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 54 at 95.62. The pound buys $1.30 and a euro 13. LBC weather, another cold but dry day for many. Some wintry showers continuing for northern parts of Scotland, Wales and North Yorkshire. A high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
After some wonderful wine for Christmas, try our wine of the week, the Barcelona Olla Rosé. Chosen by our wine expert Kevin, this lively rosé is perfect with party food. And right now, you can pick up a bottle for £8 with your club card. Tesco, every little helps. Drinkware 18 plus ends 24th of November. Club card are up required. Available in majority of larger stores and online. Excludes Express and Whoosh.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. I mean, it is a big day. There's a lot going on. The COVID inquiry findings and some early indications of some very strange communications there. And of course, you have that Russian spy ship in UK waters or thereabouts, and this Ukraine story. But none of them actually are obvious contenders for the top of the show that we spend together every morning, or most mornings. And of course, if you have missed any shows recently for any reason whatsoever, I will need a letter from your mum by the end of morning break today explaining precisely what your reasons are. It's the difference. I won't bore you with this because I appreciate it's more interesting to me than it is to you. But it is another morning. It is one of those mornings where you recognise the difference between a big story and an interesting conversation, a big story, as in one that demands and dominates headlines, and a big topic, for want of a better word, i.e. something that lends itself to the time that we spend together from 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'm just mentioning that in passing because it always amuses me or intrigues me that it's sometimes rather hard to spot the distinction. Do you remember when Ukraine was dominating our thoughts and our agenda, the hundreds of thousands of people that made their way here and were offered the warmest of welcomes, the brief window during which even Boris Johnson managed to appear as if he were a world leader of some repute? Everyone conveniently forgot the partying with KGB families and somehow anointed him the great defender of Kyiv. And he was greeted with open arms by Volodymyr Zelensky, who seemed to be on the news all the time. And today we find ourselves contemplating the possibility of him being forced or compelled to accept an extraordinary deal that appears to have been cobbled together by one of Vladimir Putin's key cronies and one of Donald Trump's, well, key cronies. You see the phrase cash for land in the headlines and you think, what on earth could that mean? I mean, you know literally what it means, but it would involve control of the eastern Donbass region being ceded to the Kremlin while still being nominally owned by Ukraine, who would receive rent for surrendering their claims, if you like, or allowing Russia to be their tenants. And, you know, secretive talks, thrashings out, none of which included Kyiv, none of which included Ukraine, the US and Russia to, I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime, but two regimes that appear to be a heck of a lot closer to each other than they are to European or indeed British interests. So Ukraine would be forced to surrender territory. The Ukrainian army would be cut in half. Ukraine would be banned from possessing long-range missiles. Ukraine would be banned from deployments of foreign troops on its own territory. US military assistance would be withdrawn. Foreign diplomatic aircraft would be prevented from landing in the country. Russian would be made an official state language, and the Russian Orthodox Church would be given official status in the occupied territories. On the plus side, Ukraine would be permitted to negotiate security guarantees from the US and European governments to help maintain any ceasefire. I mean, it's come out of Trump's camp, apparently. It is clearly a historical fact that Zelensky has repeatedly ruled out surrendering the entire Donbass as the price for peace. But this appears to be the plan to which Donald Trump will attach his hopes of one day securing a Nobel Peace Prize. It is a deal that officials familiar with the process have told newspapers and other members of the media that is very much in the pipeline. It's important also to remember, I think it might be even more important than you initially acknowledge, that there is a massive corruption scandal unfolding in Ukraine, which leaves Zelensky very, very, very exposed. He has dismissed two top officials and imposed sanctions on his own close associates after his government investigators revealed that $100 million had been embezzled from the energy sector through kickbacks paid by contractors. He's done his best to lance the boil. He's fired people, he's sanctioned people, but the fact that some of these crooks were senior members of Zelensky's circle leaves him very, very and obviously exposed. It's particularly prickly, this issue, because energy power outages have been commonplace since the invasion began, and allegations of corruption in the energy sector are not going to go down well with people that are often denied